waiting all week for this, and here it is. The Illegal Curve Radio Show starts now. Here comes 2 hours of hard-hitting hockey talk, and here's your host, Drew the Bear Mindell.
For the final time here on 92.9 Kick FM, good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba, and for all those listening live tonight, and streaming live tonight at www.ustream.tv/illegalcurve. Good evening, universe, and welcome to the final Illegal Curve radio show here on 92.9 Kick FM. In case you missed the news, we are going to be debuting Saturday morning, 10 a.m. till 12 noon on Sports Radio 1290. The website, sportsradio1290.com, in case you're outside of the listening audience in Winnipeg. We are thrilled to be moving to 1290, but we're also thrilled to do one final show here on 92.9 Kick FM, and we'll be splashing through some remembrances throughout the program here tonight. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, Craig Custance of the Sporting News will be joining us. Craig was our second ever guest here on the program. It's only fitting that he joins us on our final show tonight. I'm joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, the operator of the R-Desk, Michael Remus, behind the glass doing her fabulous producing job, Denise Isett. She's waving. She's humble and waving and shyly. Anyways, gentlemen, good evening and welcome to the show.
Well, Drew, we're pretty pumped, I got to say. We're not only are we pumped to be moving to 12 Sports Radio 1290 on Saturday, pretty pumped for this show tonight. I mean, we were talking about it on the off air before we got in here between the Free Press show, which is they were nice enough to have us on beforehand. You know, we don't know what a Wednesday night. I don't remember what a Wednesday night really feels like without being on air here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, before the show started, I was in a Dungeons and Dragons league. So, we're really excited. I mean, February 2009 was our first show on here, and I mean that's. It's pretty much 2 years ago, right?
21 months to the day tomorrow.
Wow. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's going to be lots of fun tonight. And we're going to obviously thank, 30, 40 people here. But we're here to give, the Red River audience one more show and then move on to Sports Radio 1290.
Exactly right. Let's start. You know, it's still a hockey show, so you're still going to get your fix of hockey here. That's not going to change. Let's start in New Jersey today. They had Zach Parise, really the guy I would say is the heart and soul of that team in terms of a skater, Brodeur obviously in net, but the heart and soul of that team, as you're nodding, you're a Devils fan. He's out for 3 months. He underwent arthroscopic knee surgery after being diagnosed with a torn meniscus. Sort of two-part question here. First of all, he was injured initially in August when he hurt his knee skating. So a two-part question. A, how devastating is this to the Devils? And B, why did it take so long for this injury to come to the forefront?
Well, B's going to be a little bit hard to answer, Drew, but A is pretty easy. It's definitely devastating to the Devils. Pretty much everything has gone wrong, for the Devils this year, Richie. And, I mean, at 3-9-1, they're last place in the league or, 29th, whatever. They're last place in the East. And, Jason Arnott was benched on Monday.
Wasn't happy about it
either. Ilya Kovalchuk was benched earlier, about a week and a half ago. The Devils can't score. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later when we get into three things that we learned this week. The Devils look awful. They do look like a very young, inexperienced team that has absolutely no chemistry. Marty Brodeur basically has to get a shutout for the team to win because they're getting one or two goals every game or none. And this is absolutely terrible news. Zach Parise, the heart and soul of this team, there are some, pretty character type guys on the team with Langenbrenner, and even Brodeur, doesn't get as much credit for being the leader of the team. But
absolutely,
without Zach Parise, you basically have a line that is in disarray, and that line is the top line. With Zajac and Parise and Langenbrenner, even though Langenbrenner has been moved around and Kovalchuk has been on that line, Travis Zajac, it loses out big time because he's been feeding the puck to Parise and just the way they played together.
They both went to University of North Dakota together, I think.
They both went to UND and basically had instant success, Rich, together. Zajac came onto the Devils a year later, but they have been together almost the entire time. And, as it was with three rookie defensemen on the Devils, they were doing poorly. Now without Parise, I mean,
you and
for 3 months,
I,
that's 30 games right there.
You and I were together on Saturday, and we watched that Devils team, and that Devils defense looked horrible. Let's be honest, that Devils defense looked horrible. And then to get the news that after Nezzy and I go out, to get the news that Parise, you can tell, by the way, that he was injured before because the collision wasn't that bad. So you could tell it was aggravated. Losing Parise, let's just be frank, guys. He's their best player.
Yeah.
Never mind forward, never mind defense, never mind goal. He's their best player.
Never mind the fact that Kovalchuk's getting made.
Including Kovalchuk. He's better
than Kovalchuk. Oh, yeah, absolutely. All-around player.
You know, we talked about that before. You know, Bobby Ryan can't make as much as Ryan Getzlaf, right? He can't. Mm-hmm. But you paid Ilya Kovalchuk that now. Well, Parise's better than him, so how do you pay? So that presents a bunch of problems for Lou Lamoriello, who's sure had trouble since the cap came into place, which is funny because beforehand he was pretty good at managing his funds. Anyways. Yeah, you can't understate the loss here. They lose Parise. I mean, the one positive you have with the Devils, if you can get it, if they can get their head on straight, is they have a fair amount of depth up front. I mean, I realize their Rolston's hurt too, and not Parise, but you have Kovalchuk, you have Zajac, you have Arnett, who obviously they benched, you have Langenbrunner. I mean, you have established NHL players who have scored before. Now maybe they're on the right side of 30 in terms of. You know, that exuberance and youth, et cetera, that you can bring. But there is talent there. And you have Zubras who can play a good third-line center role if that's the role they choose to place him in. If you were to clamp down a bit defensively, you know, have your scorers score like Kovalchuk on a Roman score and then change your style a bit or have the team buy into it more, you could be okay. Of course, the problem is if you're 500 right now and you had to buy into that, you could feel a little better about it. But you're already six games below 500. Now having to deal with this problem. You lost your best player for 3 months for the core of the NHL season.
And getting back to Drew's, you know, the second part of Drew's question, we have really no idea how bad the injury was. He had 6 points in 12 games.
It's terrible, by the way, for him.
It's bad for him. From what I've read, I have no idea how serious the injury was in the summer or how it happened. You know, maybe it was, I'm assuming it was, you know, getting ready for training camp. But you got to think that Zach Parise, he's 24, 25 years old. He's in good shape. He hasn't missed, that much hockey, you know, in the 5 years he's been in the league. Mm-hmm. You got to think that he thought it was all right. And I think it's important to note that this was exploratory surgery, which means they didn't know how bad the tear was.
Them up without knowing how bad the result was going to be. They knew something was up, but they didn't know what it was. I mean, is this a lost season for the Devils, or is it too early for that?
It's just because in the NHL you get so many points for, you know, playing every game, you get points somehow. So nobody's really out of it.
These guys really haven't, though.
That's what Gary Bettman wants, right, Drew? I mean, even the Carolina Hurricanes last year got off to a worse start than the Devils have so far. I mean, the Hurricanes' streak extended, and they had a lot of injuries, too, worse than the Devils. But they made a run, you know, the three-quarter point of the season, and they weren't out of it, but they weren't in it, but they were 6 points out. So you never want to say this early that the team's out of it. But mathematically speaking, you look at the team right now and you say, okay, they play 10 games. Mm-hmm. Okay? They have...
They play 13 games.
Yeah. Sorry. And you have 7 points.
Yeah.
So mathematically, you need about 93, 94 points to make the playoffs. So in the next 70 games, guys, you need to get upwards of like 85 points. Think about it that way. And if you look at it that way, Drew... And I wrote this article actually last year on the Legal Curve website when we were posting every day.
I thought this was going to be a puck prospectus coming from a mile away.
Legal Curve. I got some flack for it. I wrote a Legal Curve, and it was, you guys probably remember, I said, by the math, forget the talent on the ice, because Carolina and Toronto last year weren't as talented as this Jersey team. By the math, Toronto and Carolina, after their terrible starts last year, just couldn't make it. And somebody said, oh, what if they... Well, think about the pace they have to play. And I realize the averages fact, you know, that you play in the beginning of the season into the averages, but, like, in this room, guys, think about it. If you're the Devils right now, you have to basically play at a 85 point pace for the rest of the rest 70 games. I mean, that's hard.
Right, 13 games.
You know what that pace is over the course of the season? It's almost like second or first in the division.
You can say 13 games into the season, you're still not even. I mean, you're about 12% completed.
Keep in mind, you played your first 13 games of the season with your best player. And that's all you could do is get 7 points.
You play a tough division.
I mean, you know, going on a little bit of a tangent here, the main reason that I could come up with for why the Devils have been so bad is their defense. I mean, you've got three rookie defensemen: Tyler Ekford, Olivier Magnon, and Matt Tarmina, who are all off the radar guys that they had
most
to call up from the AHL. Colin and that's because Bryce Salvador and Anton Volchenkov, their free agent acquisition, are in the lineup. Colin White, Andy Green, and they're just not good enough to carry a defense with those guys.
These prospects, guys, aren't top of the line Tyler Myers prospects here. There's a reason you haven't heard of them.
That's right, because they're not blue chip.
Ekman Larson's guys. No matter what city you're in, if you're a top prospect, your name will get out there.
I mean, we got to wrap up the segment because we got Craig Custance coming up in a minute or so, but it's just very it's hard to find a silver lining for what's happened in New Jersey, really, since they decided to sign Kovalchuk to the first rejected contract. It has just been a disaster all the way through. And if they blame it on John McClain, I think they're fooling themselves. The responsibility, I think, lies at Lou Lamoriello's door.
Agreed, Drew. I know we're up against it. Quickly on the side end there. Apparently, the Parise-Kovalchuk relationship is not good.
Already?
Yeah, before.
Before, from last season. Good,
Andrew, just really quickly, I mean, everyone that watches TSN, CBC, Sportsnet has already heard the should Lou Lamoriello be fired talk, but... I mean, it's pretty ridiculous, but...
I don't think it is ridiculous.
Lou being fired.
The fact of the matter is the longest-serving GM in the league has never had anything like that ever uttered. No one's ever questioned Lou Lamoriello because he has always been respected as one of the greatest GMs ever.
I think he's done a lousy job for the last 5 years.
Got a couple bad contracts. Well, we might have to save that for another show.
How do you let Scott Gomez go and then give Jason Arnett $5 million?
How do you... You know, I mean,
I'd like to have Scott Gomez still on the New Jersey Devils. I'll tell you that much.
I'm trying to think.
He's not washed up. He's still got a good 6 years left.
Aren't they still playing Vladimir Malikov?
What about Paul? What about just this year? What about Paul Martin and somebody else? Why bring in Jason? I know Paul Martin signed a longer term deal, but why bring in Jason Arnett when you have a lot of offensive depth? When you can keep Paul Martin and add Anton Bochek? When you have no puck moving defense,
they couldn't afford to let Martin go.
No.
Not the defense depth that they have. Offensive, we'll get into it another time. But
yeah. I mean, it just seems like it's been a bad couple of years there in New Jersey for Lou Lamoriello. Let's go to break. When we come back, Craig Custance of the Sporting News will be joining us. You're listening to the final episode of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on 92.9 Kick FM. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve radio show here on this Wednesday night from 92.9 Kick FM Studios. For the final time here on Kick FM, we're moving over to Sports Radio 1290 as of Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, so please come join us. Until then, we're pleased to be joined now by Craig Custance of the Sporting News. If I could press the button properly.
Can you press the button, Drew?
I'm having trouble with the button.
Those are big buttons.
There you go,
too,
Craig
Drew.
Custance. Welcome to the Illegal Curve radio show.
How's it going, guys?
Good, Craig. How are you doing?
Back, Craig.
I'm good. I'm good.
That's good. Now, Craig, you used to be based out of Atlanta. You're back in Detroit now.
Right.
But, you know, obviously you're intimately familiar with Ilya Kovalchuk how he is in the locker room and that sort of way. You know, how do you see him fitting in New Jersey? I mean, they've had such problems all year round. You know, what can you tell us about the sort of the mindset of Ilya Kovalchuk as it relates to an NHL dressing room?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I never got the sense that Ilya was kind of your prima donna, kind of wide receiver-like athlete or superstar. I mean, he was definitely a guy. I know when he got the C in Atlanta, he really made an effort to be inclusive with his teammates and, you know, and do things together. And, you know, he definitely reached out to guys. But at the same time, I mean, Ilya Kovalchuk, you know, he's not the most social guy in the room, right? So you know, I think at times, when you balance, you know, culture differences, there was, you know, a period of Atlanta where he was still learning the language, and the fact that he's a superstar, the fact that he likes the puck a lot, you know, and the fact that he's getting the most attention in the room, I'm sure there's definitely going to be some issues there at times. But I never got the sense he was a bad guy in the room necessarily, or a guy that would join a team and be disruptive, which I don't think is the case in New Jersey.
Craig, when you covered Atlanta, it was a team that, you know, it kind of like Kovalchuk, not only Kovalchuk really, but it was more of a free-flow offensive system, whether
sure.
it be Bob Hartley,
right.
whether it be John Anderson, the offensive coaches for the most part. Do you see the adjustment, you know, Kovalchuk having a fairly difficult adjustment to a more structured system?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You asked how he fits in the dressing room. To me, the curious fit was the system. I mean, I got this, like you said, this is a free-flowing guy who focused on one side of the ice his entire career. And when he did butt heads with coaches, it was either A, because he, you know, missed a meeting, or B, he didn't play enough defense. And so that, to me, it raised my eyebrows when he was traded to New Jersey, of all teams, at the deadline, because he just didn't seem like a good fit. And then, you know, when it came to free agency and I talked to people and I was really trying to get a feel for how serious the Devils would be in re-signing him, mm-hmm. someone said, look, that, you know, they're they're not really going to go after him. It was a bad fit. And, you know, the opinion was that this was just a square peg into a round hole. And then naturally we saw what happened over the summer. That wasn't the case at all. So either there's an evolution going on in New Jersey and it's an awkward transition, you know, or that decision came from somewhere else.
Which is possible. You know, you're now back in Detroit, Craig, and a question at the Red Wings. I mean, the Red Wings, for the most part, everybody sees them. They're not moving forward. This is a team that, Jimmy Howard or not Jimmy Howard, people know where they're going to be at the end of the season. A player they brought back from last year, Jiří Hudler, people had high expectations for him. You know, a year development, playing very well in the KHL. You know, obviously he was a good player beforehand. What's been his problem, and why is he a healthy scratch right now?
Well, you know, I think that Mike Babcock was a little bit frustrated with that line. I mean, at the beginning of the year, he put Mike Modano and Hudler and Dan Cleary together. And you know, on paper, you look at that line and say, wow, that's a pretty good third line for any team, right? And really, that's always kind of been the Detroit Red Wings' MO through the years. I mean, they beat you with their depth. And if you're able to shut down their stars, it was always a guy like Malby or a Chris Draper or somebody that would beat you. And I think that's what you know, the designs they had on with this year's team, because they didn't have that last year. When there were injuries, some of the depth didn't come through like they had hoped. So yeah, Hudler hasn't worked out yet, and you know, it's interesting because you know, I don't have a good answer for you why. I don't know if it's just here we are, essentially you have three guys, if that's the line that's eventually going to be playing together, you had three guys that were playing on different teams last year, and I think there's going to be, it's going to take some time, but Mike Babcock is not necessarily the most patient guy in the world. I mean, he's a results-oriented coach. He gets along with you as long as you're producing,
Craig,
which Hudler is not.
Sorry, definitely not. Sorry to cut you off there.
No,
we wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Ottawa Senators. They squeaked past the Leafs last night, but they've been struggling all year. Have you heard anything, brewing in Ottawa with, you know, GM Brian Murray trying to maybe make a deal and improve his club?
Yeah, when I talked to somebody about Ottawa, it was right before, I mean, you guys I'm sure saw the comments that Brian Murray said that he, you know, there was, I think he said he reached out to Minnesota and he was, you know, he was looking to at least shake things up, which I think is the right approach. But at the same time, you know, when I spoke to someone, I said, is this realistic? Is this a team that we can expect moves from? And kind of the attitude was, your expectation was that just their salaries really tied them up. I mean, you look at what they did in the offseason and adding a guy like Sergei Gonchar, and you know, it really didn't make a lot of sense for them. I don't know if they would even be able to have the flexibility needed to make the moves they want to, right? So I think that is an issue right now for Brian Murray, and a guy who probably would like to shake it up, but just doesn't have the flexibility for it to happen. I think an encouraging sign was that Gonchar seems to be playing a little bit better. I mean, that's a guy that they're counting on. I know that they brought him in and they had designs and they just had, you know, they thought he would really help their power play. And you know, again, on paper, it looked like it was going to be a good fit. And again, you have to give these things time. And I think we're maybe seeing signs of that turning around in Ottawa.
You know, Craig, around the league, that seems to be, you know, we just spoke about it, Detroit, you know, Modano, Cleary, and Hudler. And then you see, you know, we're talking about now with Gonchar.
Right.
It's always bad, but it's especially bad now with new media and Twitter and all this stuff that people get on players, especially players in new situations. After 10 games, like, trade him, get rid of him. He's terrible. Bench him. I mean, and do the coaches maybe feed into that a bit because they hear it so much that they have to act on it?
I don't know how much the coaches are. I mean, you guys are like I am. I mean, we're on top of it every day, and you're reading it all, and you're reading everything in the blogs and Twitter and everything. I don't think that, you know, the coaches are, you know, obviously they're not as connected as we are in that regard. But yeah, I would say it certainly ramps up the pressure of these guys. I mean, look at Ilya Kovalchuk. People are we've already decided that's just a complete disaster. He's in the first month of a 15-year contract.
There's 14 years and 11 months left here.
He's got 14 years and 11 months left, and we've already washed our hands of it. We're ready to move on. Yeah. You know, and it was funny because I wrote, I think it was maybe six games, and I'm just as guilty as anybody. I wrote, you know, early on saying, boy, the Kings look smart not signing Kovalchuk, and look at their depth on defense with Willie Mitchell, and this is all paying off, and what a great decision. And here we are, you know, 2 weeks into the season, and we want to rush to judgment. And that's just the reality of, you know, the internet and how media is right now. So yeah, I think it certainly ramps up the pressure.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve radio show by Craig Custance of the Sporting News. Now, Craig, you mentioned the Los Angeles Kings, which is a great segue because that was my question, is going to be about the Kings and their goaltending duo. You know, what are your thoughts? I mean, you have Jonathan Quick, who's, you know, performed very well this year at the start, and then you have Jonathan Bernier, the guy everybody's anointing as the next great NHL goaltender. What are your thoughts about the way the Kings are using them? You got Quick is mainly getting the games against getting the bulk of the work, getting the games against the divisional opponents, but they're using Bernier for sort of tough matchups like they did against the Blackhawks last week. What are your thoughts about the way the Kings management is balancing those two goalies?
I actually love it. I love that thought process, in that you're not giving Bernier kind of these meaningless games, you know, or you're putting him in challenging situations. And I think certainly there's been an adjustment for him as a guy that's used to playing a lot to now. I think he's only has three starts so far this year. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he's had to adjust to that. You know, the guy I want to give a lot of credit to here is Jonathan Quick because, you know, like you said, we were all ready to anoint Jonathan Bernier their starter, and we saw kind of what happened down the stretch last year where Quick struggled a little bit, and he looked, you know, Bernier looked great at, you know, a couple games there. And, you know, and I still think ultimately, I don't know how it's going to shake out and how it's going to happen, but I think Bernier seems to be the guy that's going to be the long-term guy in L.A. But, I mean, you know, as an American, I know, like, Team USA looks at Jonathan Quick as a guy that's going to be a part of their, you know, the futures as far as Olympic teams or world championships. So, I mean, this is a guy that people think highly of, and I give him credit for coming in into camp ready to compete, coming into shape, and earning that job. And he's been great. He's got a, you know, a 1.84 goals against, a .936 save percentage. Jonathan Quick has done anything we've asked of him so far.
I think you said it right about Quick there too, Craig, because the truth is when most people get to see players for an extended period of time, it's in the playoffs. And we saw Quick in the playoffs last year, and he wasn't great. But you don't, you know, many people forget the guy played 70 games.
He was
worn down. I mean, not everybody's Marty Brodeur. Marty Brodeur gets obviously worn down, but and Kiprusoff and those guys, they wear down. And Quick especially, a guy who obviously hadn't played that load before. I mean, he's certainly proving that he's better goalie than maybe he was in the playoffs there.
No, I agree. So, all right, so I mean, let's look at Jonathan Quick's season last year. It's really, you know, he's playing the most games he's ever played. He's the bona fide number one, so he has that pressure on his team that we're all expecting to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He plays in the Olympics. He plays in the playoffs for the first time. I mean, that's a lot for a guy,
yeah.
A young kid. And then on top of it all, he's got somebody behind him pushing that we've all decided is better than him, mm-hmm. right? So, I like the attitude he's taken. You know, you're not hearing anything from him other than he's just going to put his head down, work a little bit harder, and try to fight for his job. And he's doing it so far.
Segue into another goaltending controversy. Goaltending seems to be the talk of the day these days. But we'll talk about a goaltender who's proven himself in the past for the most part and has a guy behind him who's not considered a threat preseason, so kind of the complete opposite situation in L.A., and that's in Pittsburgh. Marc-Andre Fleury, who's generally had a fragile confidence level but certainly has the skills, is right now being outplayed by, you know, journeyman Brent Johnson. I'm of the belief that, I mean, Pittsburgh needs to get this fixed, obviously, as quickly as possible because they're not going to go anywhere with Brent Johnson as opposed to Marc-Andre Fleury. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I would certainly be in that camp. That if we're talking long term, I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury is obviously their franchise goalie. He's the guy that's won in the playoffs. And I spoke, I had a conversation with their goaltending coach right before the season, and he said he still thought that Marc-Andre Fleury still had another level to get to. I mean, he thinks that, you know, this guy is, I don't even know offhand how old Marc-Andre is now, but he's not as old as you think he is. He's still pretty young. So he's 25. So here's a guy who's 25 years old. If you imagine, you know, his peak or his progress will probably come around 27, and he's already won a Stanley Cup. I mean, I still see, you know, better days for Marc-Andre Fleury, and so I just think it's a credit right now to Brent Johnson, a guy that's mm-hmm. come in, mm-hmm. and I don't think, you know, Brent. And maybe he does. I mean, he has to realize that ultimately this is Marc-Andre's job. The Penguins are better off if he earns that back. But if you're Dan Bylsma, you've got to win games. You've got to earn points, and I understand what they're doing there.
Craig, it wouldn't be right if we didn't ask you about the ownership situation in Glendale with the Phoenix Phoenix Coyotes. What have you heard lately, you know, as far as the developments with Matthew Hulsizer and you know, other ownership-related issues?
Well, you know, last I checked with Bill Daly, and it's been probably a couple weeks now, but, I mean, they were still optimistic that a deal's going to get done. And you know, we're all looking at the December 31st deadline. And
58 days away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you guys are...
Craig, Drew has a calendar, Craig. He actually has a calendar, and he rips off each day, and it's like a Far Side calendar.
You know, Bill has made a date, and it's a little misleading to call that a deadline, I think, because I know some people might think that, okay, it's December 31st, and that means Phoenix is going to pack their bags and leave, and you know, that just opens the door for the NHL to, you know, to make their move if they have to, but at the same time, I mean, it's a deadline, but it isn't. I mean, they still could theoretically get a deal done in Phoenix, I guess, after that point, but... You know, we'll see. I still think the league is bounded and determined. I've now seen, for whatever reason, I seem to be following Gary Bettman around in my travels, and I keep seeing him when he's doing his radio show. And you know, when he talks to these cities, I saw him in Pittsburgh and I saw him in Buffalo. I mean, you know, they're quick to remind that you know, that they've been in this situation before with teams where it looks pretty bleak, and they're pretty committed to keeping me in there. And you've just seen, I mean, the lengths they've gone to bend over backwards to keep that team in Phoenix. And so I imagine that's a fight that's going to continue to the bitter end.
I guess Mr. Bettman really enjoys seeing 8,000 people at Jobbing.com Arena, right?
That's a big crowd.
Yeah. I don't know. Did you guys see that picture? Oh. Someone took a picture from the press box. That was just brutal.
We have a couple fans in Phoenix who have been sending us pictures when they go to games, and it's you know, as a professional athlete, to have to perform in front of that crowd, it to me is mind-boggling. I mean, you look at the lower bowl behind the net, and there's no fans in those seats. But the best part is, why are the fans still in the upper deck?
I know. Well, you know, because those are the seats they're giving away, I imagine, right? You don't want to give away the $200 seat in the front row or whatever it is. But, you know, as bad as that is, you can almost defend fans in Phoenix for not showing up until that's settled, right?
Yeah,
where I would be concerned, if you sit and watch, and I'm actually watching this Atlanta-Florida game, and, I mean, there's just as many empty seats in this game.
Or
if you watch Columbus, I mean, that's a team that's off to a pretty decent start under a new coach. And sure, I'm sure those fans are probably tired of – I mean, these aren't very successful teams we're talking about in non-traditional markets, so it's a bad combination. It's not just Phoenix, right?
No. I think Columbus still has hope. I think the fans there just want to see some improved performance. I think the fans will be back if they play well. In Atlanta, I think Atlanta, it's not going to make a difference. I mean, Atlanta's
you would know
first and foremost, Craig, how difficult of a sports town Atlanta is in the best of times.
Period, yeah.
Never mind a non-traditional market in a team that's struggling.
You know, I'll say this about Atlanta. I covered their only two playoff games at home in franchise history, and the crowd was unbelievable. It was probably one of the loudest crowds I've ever seen in a hockey game. And that city, for whatever it was that week, you know, leading up to it, was really into it. And there's a lot of hockey transplants in Atlanta, but they're not going to support a losing team. There's a lot of Buffalo fans and Pittsburgh fans and Red Wings fans that are willing to become Thrashers fans if there's a viable product, and there hasn't been for a decade.
And that's, you know, that's just it. You know, can you put enough money into a team and make them successful? But if you put too much money into them, you lose money. So, you know, it's a slippery slope, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a balancing act. So you really, I mean, you have to do, if I'm one of those teams, Nashville is my blueprint. I mean, they're so patient with their young players. They're putting their money into player development. They have patient, you know, they've identified a GM in David Poile who's the right guy. They've got a coach in Barry Trotz who's the right guy. The trick is getting those people in place. And I think Phoenix actually has it right now. And a guy in Don Maloney who's done a fantastic job as a GM there, and a guy, you know, in Tip who's by all counts one of the best coaches in the league. If you have those people in place, you can do that. It's just a matter of hiring the right people, and you have to wonder if that's happened in some of these other markets.
Craig, you were our second ever guest here on the Illegal Curve Radio Show when we were on when we started 20 months ago or so on Kick FM.
Second, who was the first? I can't believe I wasn't that first.
Dave Staples of the Edmonton Journal.
Nice.
You are our second ever guest, and I'm not sure if you're aware, but we're moving stations as of Saturday. We're going to a 24-hour all sports station, and we thought it would be fitting to have you on to bookend our time here on Kick FM. And we thank you for all the time you've given to us, and we hope you'll join us again on Sports Radio 1290 starting on Saturday.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on the new digs, guys.
Thanks very much, Craig. Appreciate it.
All right.
Take care.
See you soon.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye. That's Craig Custance of the Sporting News. You know, classic guys joined us three or four times now. I think this is the
fourth time.
I went to all the trouble of putting together a well-documented list of all of our guests, who's been on first, who's been on second, who's been on third, three times, four times,
sounds
five
like an
times,
Abbott and Costello
six times. Well, it turned out to be one because I forgot the list. So all my hard work for nothing. But anyways, we'll wing it when we give our thanks to all our guests later on in the show.
I'm just thanking Denise. I'm not thanking anyone.
Are you going to wing it after the show too?
No, I'm probably going to chicken finger it after the show, not chicken wing it. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9. Kick FM.
Time after time, I've done my sentence.
Should I wait till the... Okay, I'll let it build up.
Let her go.
Okay.
Let the poison out.
Denise, we're coming back with news and notes after we belt this out.
This is the champion, my friend.
This is like an 8-minute song.
Okay, yeah, we probably shouldn't have spent a whole segment on that.
Yeah,
that
sounds amazing.
We have a.
Wasn't that Black Rose?
Yeah, I was about to fall for that. It just goes to show, you know.
Yeah, you almost fell for that. Eh?
I know. I was about to say, I'm like Zeppelin. Anyways, we have a 5-minute best of rapid fire coming up later in the show. So for everybody that's a big fan of rapid fire, Remus has put together quite a retrospective of our rapid fire segment. But before then, it's time for NHL news and notes.
NHL. NHL. News and notes.
Starting in Toronto, after where we have a couple issues we have to deal with, both of which are Dion Phaneuf related. The first one is Phaneuf was cut by the skate of Senators forward Peter Regan in yesterday's game. He's out for 4 weeks with what they described as a deep gash in his leg.
Lucky.
Apparently lucky. It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Although what was very entertaining about it all day long, Alicia Cuthbert was updating her Twitter feed with updates about Dion Phaneuf's status. It took about, she started updating probably first thing this morning, and it took until about 3:30 for everybody to confirm that Alicia Cuthbert actually doesn't have a Twitter feed.
Okay. I heard about
That's
this.
Funny.
I know this isn't part of news and notes.
Does Chris Cuthbert have one?
I was reading a couple of, I forget if it was the Globe and Mail or Toronto Star, but, you know, this is absolutely ridiculous. First off, the fact that someone, for anybody that has that creates a fake account for someone and tweets in and of itself is ridiculous.
That's funny that you would do
but,
though.
But
I'm all real rich. You had a pony.
I did have a pony. You wouldn't expect an immigrant to have a pony, but.
That's a Seinfeld line.
As you know, and honestly, let me quickly cut in here.
Has a fake Twitter account, and then she's actually tweeting again to fool people that it's. I mean, come on, man.
Hey,
it works.
It's happened in football. This Randy Moss issue. I don't know if you guys saw what happened. Apparently, Randy Moss's agent, quote unquote, sent emails to the Minneapolis Star Tribune about his client, and then Michael Lombardi from NFL Network came on and said, "I know the agent. He doesn't even know how to use email." So it wasn't his email, and they quoted him in a story. This is happening everywhere. People have to it's confirm who it is first.
You get the little verified. If it's the real person, it's verified,
well,
and you get the little check mark
on
Twitter.
You're verified.
That's right. There are a couple fakes out there, Ezzie Jude's.
There's a couple fake Ezzie Jude's out there. Anyways, we got two issues. A, what does the loss of Phaneuf mean to the Leafs? And secondly, the other issue involving Phaneuf was Leafs GM Brian Burke came to his.
About that after.
Okay, fine. Go with the issue first.
It's fairly significant, Drew. Well, first off, it's because Phaneuf is your number two defenseman on the team. Cavalier's better than Phaneuf. But
did you see who they called up to back up Brett Lebda?
Kubina got
Drew, can you pull up the defenseman?
It was Corbinian. Yeah,
Corbinian.
That's
Corbinian, right. A German defenseman, Corbinian. But I mean, there in and itself. Go ahead.
The truth is, you have your top four. You have Beauchemin and Phaneuf and Cabrelet and Shen, and those are your top four basically. So you're moving Michael Komisarek. Mike Komisarek into your top four. Not a big deal there. I mean, Mike Komisarek's played top 4 minutes his whole career basically. And the problem, obviously, is Shen and Komisarek aren't going to give you much offense and boost other guys into the roster. And then, their power play will hurt that much. Well, Cavalier's fine. I mean, I think they'll be okay for the most part. Their transition game will hurt, which I talked about before, and the speed from the back end will hurt, and their physicality. But defensively, Phaneuf's not very good. So it'll hurt the team, but I think a little bit less than people think.
The defenseman that the Leafs called up was Corbinian Holzer from the Toronto Marlies of the AHL.
No Tyler Myers.
Yeah, anybody know anything about Corbinian besides he's probably the only Corbinian in the NHL?
I would guarantee you he's the only Corbinian in the NHL.
Okay,
in the world. That.
Yeah.
Now, staying with Phaneuf, he was booed really off the ice on Saturday night in Toronto, and Leafs GM Brian Burke came to his defense today.
Burke loves Dion Phaneuf.
This is what Brian Burke had to say. Are they entitled to do it, Burke said, about the fans? Sure they are, and I honestly don't believe it was a lot of them. It doesn't take many fans booing to be heard, so I think we're talking about a very small number. But my opinion is that it's disgraceful to boo Dion Phaneuf for everything he has done for this franchise on and off the ice in a very short period of time.
Okay, I want to jump in here right off the bat.
Jump.
It is true that it is disgraceful to boo Dion Phaneuf, especially considering he's the captain. But once again, Brian Burke needs to just chill out a little bit on what he has done for the franchise.
I agree with that.
He's been with the franchise for... like including the offseason, 8 months.
Yeah, 8 months. And
what has he done?
In Calgary, his reputation was as a terrible teammate who didn't listen to his coaches. Culture. Apparently, he's not much different in Toronto, what I heard. He's changed the culture. What? oh, because you're not 0-7 this year? It's like, that's because of DFNF. What about Tyler Bozak? What about better goaltending from John Sebastian Jaguar? What about adding Chris Versteeg, who's obviously struggled? What about all those reasons? Oh, no, DFNF changed the culture. That's why we're better. No, that's not why. And if you change the culture, I'm not so sure that's a good thing. I agree with Ezzy completely there.
Do you think that the fans have any justification
yes.
in booing him?
He didn't play well, he can boo him. Get over it. You're getting paid $6 million a year. Take it easy.
It seems like in Toronto and Montreal especially, they're going to boo any... I mean, if you're going to boo Carey Price in the preseason and you're going to boo Phaneuf in the regular season, expect to get booed whoever you are. It doesn't matter who you are.
Montreal has high expectations. Toronto just wants to make the playoffs. They haven't made the playoffs since the lockout. Phaneuf's 25 years old. He's getting paid $6.5 at cap it this year, $7 million in actual salary. So, you know what? Take a few boos, Dion, and maybe work on your defense a bit.
Okay.
Don't worry, guys. They're paying Mike Komisarek $6 million this year. So now he gets to be the fourth defenseman.
Wow. They probably have the highest paid defense in the league.
Yeah, they have to have close to that.
Yeah, I would think so. Daniel Briere of the Philadelphia Flyers was suspended 3 games for cross-checking Isles centerman Franz Nielsen.
Too many games.
Franz Nielsen is underrated.
Underrated player. Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is what Briere. Yeah, he had the Islanders actually scored on that penalty shot in the rare 3-on-5 situation.
Oh really?
They were down 2 men. They were on a 2-man 2-man penalty kill, and they got a breakaway and got the penalty shot on it.
Really?
This is what Briere said about getting the suspension. I'm shocked, he said Monday night. I think surprised is not strong enough. After all the suspensions that have been handed out the last couple of years, and this year, I didn't think I was going to get a game. Then I thought, okay, yes, I am a repeat offender. They'll probably give me a game about it. I'm shocked that it was more than a game.
There's a key. He's a repeat offender, Drew. Yeah, you know what? Beer's a good finesse player. He's had a couple of shady incidents. I have no problem. I mean, we've talked all about the show, but being hard on these guys, I thought it was justified. I thought it was fair. And I think that this is a good sign. This is a sign that they're getting harder on these plays, or attempting to, at least for one time. I have absolutely no issues at all with Colin Campbell's ruling here whatsoever.
I think when you look at it it's off of a face-off, and when you look at it, it looks kind of bad and it looks like, you know, kind of vicious. I don't think he intended to do that. I think he wanted to do a cross-check in the chest. 3 games is too much for this.
I think he intended to do it, and I mean, he said as much that Nielsen had pissed him off before the draw.
Can I just talk about this?
Yeah.
Nielsen is a very
careful
good
with the P word there, Drew.
Franz Nielsen is a very good shutdown centerman, very good defensively, very good two-way player, and so he probably aggravated him, and because he's a good player, and so we took it out on him, and you know what? That's going to be what they do, and he's going to cross-check him as opposed to pushing him or hitting him, then suspend him. I have no issues with that at all.
Yeah, especially because the game had been very emotional on the ice. It was very tense.
It was a crazy game.
Yeah, Rick DiPietro went after Briere, I think, also. I mean, there was a lot of the... DiPietro was getting involved. Should have actually gone thrown out of that game, I thought. He had sort of lost his cool.
Was Briere suspended?
A bit of that behind the net there, right? When he was
Went after a couple guys, and he kept going at him. I mean, you know, he looked like the old Rick DiPietro who liked to skate down the length of the ice at the drop of a hat and brawl with another goalie.
Richie, was Briere suspended while with the Phoenix Coyotes for about 10 games for a hit from behind or something?
I don't remember exactly his suspensions, but he might have been.
Earlier on in his career before Buffalo.
He's had some transgressions in the past, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's go to a guy who's had nothing but hard luck to start the season.
Wow.
Penguin centerman Jordan Staal is out another 6 weeks.
Got him in
weeks.
The pool.
Can't believe it.
Now, we'll go to you and your hard luck next afterwards. He's out 6 weeks after he broke his hand in practice. It's his first time practicing.
Took a shot off of his hand.
Yeah, after being
right,
out.
Or slash.
Had he been? I don't think he had been.
Yeah. Skating at least for a while. Sorry.
I think this is his first formal practice. I'm disappointed on a couple levels, Penguins head coach Dan Bylsma told NHL.com following the practice. But mostly it's personal for Jordan because he's had a difficult offseason in training camp. And then to get to the point when you're looking to come back to play and probably having to deal with another injury is disappointing. I mean, I'm sure it's disappointing to Jordan Staal. What does it mean for the Penguins?
Oh, that's huge because their depth is lacking, this is a very important injury here. Jordan Staal obviously couldn't play all year. He had the problems with his leg. I think it was infected, all that stuff. The fact is, this was an old fashioned way. What this was him getting into shape in training camp and at the beginning of the season, like the players used to do in the 70s. You know, there was no off season for him. He couldn't work out or anything. So this is what he was doing. He was getting into shape finally at practice now, and he gets his broken hand. Bad luck. 6 weeks. You know, at the end of the day, Drew, this team will be in the hunt around there. 6 weeks gives him until mid December, and then he'll be back, and they'll probably add a piece or two up near the deadline, and they'll be fine. So I mean, sure, it hurts them, especially the way Fleury's playing right now, but Pittsburgh just needs to stay around the playoff teams, and they're fine.
Richie, I remember 2 years ago when the Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup, we were watching a lot of hockey together, and we were making the observation that Jordan Staal was, you know, arguably, aside from, you know, Crosby and Malkin, the MVP, well, Fleury as well. Why not throw Fleury and Gonchar in there? But the MVP of the team at times. And Pittsburgh, you know, he has only been in the league now for 4 years, very young, but he's big, and he's such a good penalty killer. Not to mention the fact that, you know, he had 28 goals. He had his best year last year. But it's more than that. I mean, they were expecting him to come back to complete the team pretty much, because right now Pittsburgh's doing all right. I mean, you know, they've done all right with, you know, they sent Tangrady down, but they've been doing all right with their new guys. You know, Mahalik's been injured a little bit, but, you know, this is one of those things where it's just kind of like, you know, you shrug your shoulders and you say, you know, why couldn't he just come back now? Because he hasn't been. He's missed 10 games or whatever, and he's just the type of guy that you. There's nobody you can pick up in the NHL that's replaces Jordan Staal.
I mean, remember, he's picked second overall, picked ahead of Jonathan Toews. I'm actually good. Turn their game on here in the background. They're down 2-0, ready to Dallas. So this is a team that doesn't have tons of depth up front, and they're gonna. And if they're Brent Johnson's letting two goals already, so Brent Johnson's gonna come back to earth, guys. Fleury has to get his act together. They got to clamp down a bit because, aside from Crosby and Malkin, there's a lack of offensive firepower on this team.
Moving to Boston/Atlanta for this one.
It's an interesting one.
Yeah, Bruins forward Chris McGrattan, former teammate of...
Brian McGrattan.
Yeah, Brian McGrattan.
You said Chris McGrattan.
Did I say Chris?
I said Chris.
Chris and Yeller.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Remus. Thanks for backing me up on that, buddy. Sorry I kept saying that you were drunk on the air. Bruins forward Brian McGrattan had ripped his former teammate with the Senators, Chris Neal, pretty much saying that Neal's a coward who you know, starts fights and he can't finish them on the ice. Here's the exact quote that Brian McGrattan said. I heard about it, McGrattan told Boston.com. That's typical Chris Neal. I had to protect that guy for 3 years when I was there being Ottawa. He'd do that, and I'd have to fight all his battles for him the next time we'd play a team after he'd do something stupid like that. It doesn't surprise me. It all started when Chris Neal took on, was it Dennis Seidenberg, I believe, in a fight earlier this week?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. It was Seidenberg. Seidenberg's a pretty big guy. I don't know what he's talking about. I mean, he's a solid, I bet you he's about 6'2". 6'1", about 215, I bet, if you had to check that out right now.
Not a guy traditionally known for fighting, though,
Sure, but you know what? I have an issue with this Brian McGrattan, because Chris Neal, for the most part, I mean, he might fight some guys. He's not the biggest guy, Chris Neal, first of all. He's bulky. He's not the biggest guy. The guy has been able to play regular shift in the National Hockey League for a long time as being not only a fighter, but a fairly good player for a scrapper like he is. And McGrattan hasn't gotten to a game this year. McGrattan's only a fighter. McGrattan can't really play the game as opposed to, you know, on the other hand, you have Neal who can't. So I think there's a fair amount of jealousy here, guys. Chris Neal's got made more money in his career, more likable.
Well, I find it ironic coming from Brian McGrattan, the guy who's really had a lot of locker room issues in most of the cities he's gone to.
Well, he had the whole alcohol problem there, and he's in rehab for a while when he signed with Phoenix, I believe, and then he came back with Calgary. So
yeah, he really got booted out of the Ottawa dressing room.
That's right.
I mean, there was all sorts of substance issues.
Well, that's what he entered rehab right after.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely right. Drew, you know, people in glass houses shouldn't throw...
What, you want to finish that?
Stones.
Okay.
I thought you usually finish my...
This isn't Mad Libs, Richard. Yeah. You can finish your own thoughts.
Drew usually finishes this.
I didn't know Drew was a sentence finisher.
Drew's actually been a very good sentence finisher over the years.
Thank you.
It's like we finish each other's sentences.
What?
She was a low talker.
You're just going to keep saying Seinfeld lines the whole
show?
She
has man hands.
Yeah.
Man hands, anything else?
As high talker. You know, I just want to say one thing about Brian McGrattan. This is just complete... This is just complete, you know... Silent talk. I mean, I'm not paying attention to this at all. I didn't hear this quote until you brought this up right now. And I mean, Chris Neal is a tough guy. He's a light heavyweight. He's been on Ottawa now for 8 years.
Yep.
You know, he can score. He can put the puck in the net once in a while. But he has been protecting the Ottawa Senators forwards and defensemen, you know, as long as he's been there. And if you pull around the league, and Chris Neal is usually up there in penalty minutes. If you pull toughest guys in the league. I mean, maybe not so much anymore because Chris Neal's, you know, early 30s
now
or whatever.
31, yeah.
But, and that's when you start to, you know, once you've taken a couple hits. But, I mean, this is uncalled for, and it's not really necessary, and I'm not really paying that much attention to it, really. I don't think you guys are either.
Well, McGrattan needs to get into a game for him to actually act on it, right?
That's the problem.
You know, too much offensive depth, and his role right now is being reduced. You know what? If he could play like Chris Neal,
then he'd be
in
the lineup.
He can get into a game, so...
Let's do a final NHL
news and notes, and that's going to Calgary with Mark Giordano, the contract he signed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Big signing, you know, for the Flames. I'm pulling up the numbers as we speak here.
It's a little bit surprised at how much he got based on what other guys are getting.
He's their best defenseman, is he? I mean,
but I mean, you got to think Regier is going to be. Is Regier an RFA coming up, or is he still under contract?
Regier's got
a few more years
left. $4 million.
He's got
three
more years. Been rumored to
it's a little bit surprising, though. You got Bomeister, got Regier, and now you've got Giordano. All of those guys are averaging, what, $5 million?
They got him.
He signed a five-year contract.
Yeah. Giordano's going to be at $4.4 million. I think, to be honest with you guys, $4 million for a guy who can add some nice offense, I thought it was about market value. He had offense. He can skate. He can play a lot. He's only 26 years old, so you're only signing him for, I think, so how long is the deal?
5 years.
5 years for defenseman, so 26 to 31, pretty good years for defenseman. I thought that was a pretty good signing. I had no problems with that at all.
Is this where the Flames should be spending their salary cap dollars, though?
Well, Drew, the truth is he's a UFA. You have Ian White coming off the books. You haven't re-signed him yet. Stales, I don't know how they brought him in the first place. Party, those guys. So next year,
he's really gotten it hard in Calgary.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to base your defense around Bay Bomeister, Robin Regier, and Mark Giordano, not a bad place to start. I mean, it's a lot of money you're paying, but not a bad place to start. Then you do it. I mean, if you let all those guys go, then you don't have much on the front end. You don't have much on the back end, and you're only relying on Kiprusoff. And the way their roster is constructed, I didn't have any problem with the signing. Okay. You have Kiprusoff for another 4 years, so you got to keep the house. You got to protect the house, as they say.
What are you, an Under Armour commercial?
No, but protect the house means protect the front of the net. You have to protect your defense and your goaltending because that's the strength of your team right now. If you try and fix other parts and weaken your, try and fix your offense by weakening your defense, you're going to go in circles. But if you can keep your defense strong and goaltending strong and then add in a part or two on offense through development or through trade, then maybe you can get somewhere.
Rich, did you borrow my head and shoulders? No.
What?
Yeah, what?
Polamalu commercial.
But what about it?
The Troy Polamalu commercial where...
We know the commercial, but what does that have to do with anything?
Nothing. I mean, killing time. We've got 50 seconds left here. I just...
Say
hi to Tim for me. I'll tell you what. Ezzy, you could have a best of show just on your own over what you've done for the last 20 months here on this program.
Don't worry.
Say hi to Tom for me.
There's some classic Ezzy moments coming up on the rapid fire.
Okay, I mean, it's too much. Let's go to break when we come back. What are we doing when we come back? score update and six things we learned this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show, the final edition of the Illegal Curve Radio Show here on Kick FM. We'll be on Sports Radio 1290 on Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 Kick FM. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. Our final edition of this show here on Kick FM. I'll be plugging this for a while in case you guys haven't noticed. We're moving to Sports Radio 1290 as of Saturday morning, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. That's where you'll be able to find us. Also, you can always find us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, on Facebook, Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and, of course, on our website, www.illegalcurve.com. If you can't find us at any of those places, you're really not looking hard enough.
Drew, do we still have a High Five account?
No, it's been replaced by MySpace.
Did you have MySpace?
Yeah, that's where the Illegal Curve band is getting all of its notice and by the record industry.
We should probably get on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a very popular business tool.
I am on LinkedIn.
As a Legal Curve or just yourself?
I keep
yourself?
Getting messaged to join LinkedIn, and I don't want to. So
Drew's on there. You don't want to get on there.
Denise, have you tried Ancestry.ca? It's a very nice little website.
No, because all my ancestors are not from this country.
That would be the point of the website.
Anyway. Whoa, Drew's
I got a little serious.
Showing a little tune.
Through your stock and Ancestry.
Don't worry, Denise. Once again, I'll come to your rescue if Drew's bothering you. I'm here for you right here. That's all right.
Score update?
Okay, thanks. We'll start tonight in Washington, where the Leafs minus Dion Phaneuf are playing against the Caps. And right now it is Washington 3, Toronto 2. 15 minutes to go in the third period.
Leafs got started. Nikolai Kuhlman with assists from Grabowski and Carl Gunnarsson. Caps came back with three unanswered goals. Mike Green got a second of the year from Alexander Semin and Ovechkin. Jason Chimera, speed skater there, scored the second goal with assists from Boyd Gordon and Matt Bradley. And then the third goal, Thomas Fleischmann popped one with an assist to John Carlson, who had, I think, originally got credit for the goal, and Brooks Like. And then the Leafs just answered back. Their best defenseman scored in the 4-14 into the third period, Thomas Cabrera. 3-2 Caps.
Very nicely done. In Buffalo tonight, the struggles of the Sabres continue. Boston 4, Buffalo 1.
Are we going to talk about the captaincy benching there? Or?
No Ryan Miller there.
Well, what we'll do first is we'll give a score update. Brad Marchand, he's also a speedster. He got the scoring started shorthanded. soon after, about just a little bit more than 10 minutes later, another shorthanded goal. Patrice Bergeron scored from Marchand and Gregory Campbell. That doesn't really make much sense considering they have three forwards on shorthanded. We'll check into that. And then they scored 2 minutes later. Blake Wheeler scored from Michael Ryder, who's they've been rumored. Both those guys have been rumored in trades. And Zdeno Chara. Michael Ryder scored again, so clearly he doesn't want to go anywhere. And then Drew Stafford answered from Connolly, Palmerville, 4-1 Boston.
In Carolina tonight, the Hurricanes have finally scored on home ice. It is Carolina 5, New York 1. They've been shut out on home ice up to this point in the season.
Well, they're blowing them out. Corvo scored, Matsumoto, Eric Staal, Brandon Sutter, Yuri Tulusti. No naked pictures, though. Michael Grabner answered back for the Islanders. 5-1.
In Florida tonight, which actually this game will rival the attendance of the Phoenix-Nashville game later on tonight. Atlanta 2, Florida 2, fans 2.
Oh, very well done, Drew. Jason Garrison got the scoring start in the first period. He's on Florida, if you didn't know. Sits up by Mike Weaver, Corey Stillman. Freddie Modine answered from Dustin Buffalo in the first period. Freddie Modine got the scoring started in the second period from Eric Bolton. And then Steven Reinprecht, yep, he still exists. Assists from Brian McCabe, 2-2.
In Chicago tonight, the Devils, as it your Devils, 1-0 over Chicago late in the first period.
How the mighty have fallen, Adrian?
Yeah.
Jason Arnett.
Who got the goal? Valerie Zelopukin?
Jason Arnett from Patrick Elias.
It's a good name, Zelopukin. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh at Dallas. Dallas 2, Pittsburgh nothing.
Ezzy, what trade? Forget for a second. What trade?
We're getting real here.
What trade sent Valerie Zelopukin to the Oilers?
Wow.
Was he on the Rangers then?
No, he was on the Devils, yeah. And he went to the Oilers. And who was
the
big
the Devils? Bill Guerin.
Tom yeah. Chorsky.
Bill Guerin went with him to Edmonton.
Yeah. Went with him to Edmonton.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who came back from Edmonton to New Jersey?
I'll give you a little bit of a
Adam Oates. No.
Can we get a hint here? No, Oates never played for New Jersey.
Jason Arnett.
There you go. Oh, yeah, it all comes right. Full circle there.
If you're going to do Seinfeld, that's 99,
right?
Yeah.
1999.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
You want to say who scored for Dallas?
Ezzy was 98 because the Oilers upset Avs and they had Guerin. Dallas scored Robidoux from Morrow and Ben, and then Brad Richards on kind of a broken play. I saw the highlight there. Assist from James Neal and Louis Erickson. That's their first line there.
Still to come tonight, the second half of the TSN doubleheader, Detroit at Calgary. Should be a good game. Calgary needs to bounce back after that terrible performance against Washington on Saturday.
Never good to need to bounce back against a Detroit team.
No, but if you're going to do it, you might as well do it against Detroit. They'll give you some confidence. In Anaheim,
you say the exact opposite of what I said.
Well, I'm saying I'm not. You said it's never good to have to do it, but anyways. I wonder why you get defensive again. I don't understand it.
The exact opposite of what you're thinking.
Maybe.
Can't stand you.
Chicken salad on toast with tea.
All on the side about
that. Okay. In Anaheim tonight, Tampa Bay at Anaheim. That's going to get underway at 9:00 our time. And then in Phoenix tonight, Nashville at Phoenix.
Interesting comments out of Anaheim. Bob Murray kind of pushing those top three players to get their act together. The whole team, but those top three players get your act together because if not, you might be on the trade block.
That's certainly an interesting motivational tool there by Bob Murray. Let's move to six things we've learned this week.
Six things we've learned this week.
I still...
it's a great intro.
It's just a fabulous intro. The bells really add it. Starting with Richard tonight. I'm not going to be able to pronounce his name right. Magnus PRV is a terrific talent, but is in a different mold than Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle, and will confine his game to more of the perimeter.
He will. Drew, he's a speedster. He can skate. So can Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall's a little bit more reckless, goes to the net, gets hit a little bit more. PRV's not afraid of contact necessarily, but he plays more of the perimeter. He's not going to go to the net as much. He's going to speed around the outside. He's a good player. I really like his game. He's a good compliment player. He's going to be, I think, a top six forward, but I don't think he's going to be the same style and maybe the same likability level as guys like Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle, who have Hall struggled a bit. But in the end, I think that the guys that become the most likable are the guys that always score. They go to the net, they toss their weight around a bit. He's a little more passive, great skater, pretty good puck skills. Going to be an Oiler for a long time, but maybe not the player that some people outside maybe Edmonton think he is or is going to be.
Ezzy, and this one might take me a little while to get to, but it's a funny line anyways. If the National Hockey League isn't going to schedule any games on Halloween, and traditionally they do not schedule any games on Halloween, maybe the New Jersey Devils can dress up as a real hockey team next year, because after watching them on Monday, they look like a ragtag group of skating zombies.
They should have games on Halloween, but whatever. It's not really a holiday. It's more of a candy a-thon.
What did you wear this year when you went out?
I thought you were about to say candy thong.
They on Monday, the New Jersey Devils lost to the Vancouver Canucks. They were shut out 3-0. The game ended, well, not ended, but with 6 minutes left in the game, Colin White hacked down Henrik Sedin, and he scored on a penalty shot, which just summed up the entire game. They looked horrible. They actually outshot Vancouver, but the shots weren't a very good indicator of how they played. The New Jersey Devils are not the same team this year. I don't know. I mean, we talked about it earlier. They've got three rookie defensemen, and blah blah blah. But they should try actually dressing up as a real hockey team. Not just next year, but they should try acting like a real hockey team this year, because they have not put in enough of a hardworking effort to win on a nightly basis. I know they're winning tonight, but I mean, wow, they've been terrible this year. They've only played really four good games.
Yeah,
this
year's been a bit of a joke.
The Phoenix Coyotes are lacking in so many aspects of the game that made them Cinderellas last season.
Last year, Drew, they got a lot of good performance from Jason LaBarbera, and their netminder struggled the other day, their backup goalie. Shootout success and just offense from different parts. Scotty Upshaw played really well, struggled so far this year. Peter Prukup added in a little bit. Obviously Martin Hansel's been injured. So all the things that were going right for this team last year seem to already not be going so great. They're playing in front of crowds that are smaller than last year. That has to be affecting them, as you mentioned earlier. They're only human. Sure, it's comfortable to be at home, but if you're playing not in front of anybody, you never get any momentum. Ezzy and I watched them play on Saturday. Looked fairly lifeless, Ezzy. I thought Ray Whitney, guys like that haven't really fit in that well. They're getting some of their defensemen back. Eddie Jovanovski's a year older. A lot of the things that went right for that team last year, and believe me, a lot of things went right for that team last year. So far this year, even if half of them don't go right, this team seems to me to be in for some struggles.
The Daniel and Henrik Sedin form the best offensive duo in the NHL right now, and because of their playmaking abilities, they could both end up finishing among the top five scoring leaders, the first brothers ever to do so. That's a hell of a run-on sentence.
It really is, and I took journalism at Red River College, so hopefully my instructor's not listening. But,
Ayo.
The ability for these guys to control the puck is just is ridiculous. And we all know that last year was really it wasn't a breakout year, but the year that they both put up.
Well, it was
next breakout
step
year. Yeah, good call. It was the next step, not breakout year, because they really have been. The Sedins have really progressed nicely throughout their entire career. They haven't really ever taken a step back. They've always improved little parts of their game, but it's just unreal. And watching them against New Jersey and Edmonton really closely, I mean, they're clearly the best players on the ice, and that's with Kovalchuk on the ice. Kovalchuk's a different type of player, but the way they play together, I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the top five. I'm not going to say where they are. They'll for sure be in the top 10. I can say that.
Hold on.
Unless
Hold
there,
on.
There are any injuries, they're going to be in the top 10.
In the season preview show, you told us they're not going to be in the top 10.
I know. I had Daniel Sedin, and I think Henrik Sedin was 11th or something.
Okay.
But I said Henrik Sedin would go down to the low 90s.
Yeah,
and Daniel would be
mid
90s. But I think that's going to be good enough this year. I mean, look at Ovechkin and Crosby; they're not really lighting it up.
Yeah.
They're slow. They're slowing down. But they are just incredible. And with the supporting cast that they have, Rafi Torres had a hat trick last night. It's incredible how many goals that team is going to score this year.
Yeah, their even strength offense is great. They can score on the power play. They can do it all.
Richard, your third one. Jerome McGinley critics need to take a step back.
It's getting a little out of hand, Drew. I mean, come on already. This guy is 33 years old. He's given his heart and soul to your team since he came up and played one playoff game against Dallas and scored the only goal in, I believe, 1996. He's done everything. He's taken you to the Stanley Cup final in Game 7. The guy's won two Olympic gold medals. He's wearing down a bit. Eric, it's funny, I wrote this to you, and Eric DeHatch had an article about it. He plays a certain style. Those guys, the Wendell Clarks, Cam Neelys, those guys retired basically by this age. He plays a physical style. He wants to win, and now he is not playing as physical, and he's not going the dirty air just as much, because obviously it's worn on him a bit, and you're getting on him. You can't be the guy who wanted to send him into the dirty areas all those years, and suddenly be like, well, he's not going. You can't have him both ways, guys. You wear yourself out that way. He's a talent. He's going to get you 60, 65 points, maybe 70. He's not going to get you 90 anymore, but he's still a very talented player. He's still a leader. He can still score. If you gave him a center, he'd be able to score even more than what we think he'll probably score. And people are, trade him. The truth is, if Calgary had some young players and they were going to go to rebuild, then you would maybe trade him and get some young assets. Calgary has a bunch of untradeable contracts. Might as well ride it out. Might as well try and catch Kiprusov in a bottle, essentially.
Ride the Sutter wave.
Yeah, ride the Sutter. I mean, the truth is, guys, Jerome McGinley is a terrific, terrific player. He's not what he once was. He's 33 years old, power forward. He's not 26 anymore. He's not 22 anymore. You have to temper your expectations based on the player and who he is now, not who he was later. People didn't expect Wayne Gretzky to score 90 or 80 goals or 70 goals when he was 32, 33. He became more of an assist guy. You have to adjust your game based on your age and based on the wear and tear of the seasons you've played. Deal with it.
That's funny. I said that, you know, said the same thing to you after your drinking escapades on Saturday night, that you're not the same player you once were and you need to temper your expectations about what you can handle. Funny the way that worked out. Ezzy, Scott O'Neill has done a fantastic job in his rookie year as head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Love this one.
And has instilled confidence in his young forwards. With Tuesday's 3-0 blanking of the Montreal Canadiens, the Blue Jackets are only 1 point behind Chicago for first in the Central Division with 3 games in hand.
I think it's pretty... I mean, there's a couple of things here. First off, Rick Nash scored his first goal of the season yesterday. They shut out a team, one of the hottest teams in the league in Montreal, on the road. And, you know, I think their record is 7-3 now after 10 games. I mean, why aren't more people talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets right now? I mean, at this time last year, everyone was talking about how good Colorado and Phoenix were doing last year at this time. They were both, you know, shocking people, you know, as far as how well they started. You know, Scott O'Neill is a rookie head coach. Columbus really hasn't changed their team that much. They brought in Filatov. They lost some players, and they're essentially the same team.
Just lost Cecilius for 5 weeks, I think.
Right, and I mean, it's really impressive, you know, what they've done so far with that team. And, you know, Scott O'Neill we've talked about this a few times. He's one of those kind of the new wave of coaches, the players' coach. He's done a really good job there, and you know, it's going to be tough. You know, you lose a guy like Huselius, they don't really have that many guys to replace him, but you know, you've got Jakub Voracek, Nikita Filatov. They're not tearing it up, but they're winning games, you know, by lower scores, and it's nice to see, and I think more people should be giving them props this early. Really
agree with that. Garon's played great. I like the move of putting Voracek up with Brassard and Nash. Put your top three, you know, talented young players up together. And then you're putting Vermette with you know, Filatov, and Vermette's better defensively, so put him with Filatov. So is Umberger playing on the same line, better defensively with Filatov. I like the way, you know, throw the young guys out there. Christian Huselius isn't, you know, get the young guys play. I realize now he's an injury, so it doesn't matter, but I like the Voracek move on the first line. Get him up there. He's ready now. Let him get his bearings and let him go. I agree with you, Ezzy. I think Arneil's done a very good job there.
And I mean, you know, it's I wouldn't say that, you know, I think that but based on 10 games that they're looking good, or they're going, you know, but they're going in the right direction.
Right.
And I mean, at least at this point in the season, they're going to be competitive, because as the season progresses and you know, without Huselius now, it's going to be interesting to see how they do in the next 10 games.
Right.
If they win 6 out of 10 games and they're still, you know, around that 8th spot or whatever, that's great, because you don't want to let it go too bad, because, you know, in the Western Conference, there's a lot of these teams are just waiting to get going. I mean, Detroit hasn't really got going yet, really, if you think about it. Once Detroit gets going, they'll start winning five or six games in a row easily.
Oh, yeah.
They'll do that four or five times throughout the year.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to do rapid fire. Then are we going to do the rapid fire retrospective afterwards, or are we going to do it before? How do you guys want to work it?
Well, I only made the retrospective now, so your guys' call.
We'll do it before.
We'll do it before? Okay, so we'll come back from break, we'll do the rapid fire retrospective, and then we're going to do we'll do rapid fire. Anyways, you're listening to the final episode of the Legal Curve Radio Show here on 92.9 KICK FM. Yeah, 8:20 in the evening. We're back on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. In case you're just tuning in, this is our final episode on Kick FM. We're pleased to be going to Sports Radio 1290 as of Saturday morning. So be sure to make an appointment listening 10 a.m. till 12 p.m. on Saturdays on 1290. And you can tune in live online, streaming audio, sportsradio1290.com. So be sure to find us there. Of course, you can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Illegal Curve on both those spots. You'll be able to find us. No problem at all. I am the host of this program, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, and joined in studio by the operator of the R-Desk, Michael Remus. Gentlemen, Remus has gone to the trouble As all our fans know who tune in on a weekly basis, one of our favorite segments each and every week is called Rapid Fire, where we rattle off about 6, 7, 8 topics in a row and get them sort of in rapid opinion on it, as it were. Remus has gone to the trouble of making a rapid fire composition over the past number of months. We now turn it over to that composition. I believe it's 4 minutes long. Is that Remus? Is that right, Remus?
That is correct.
Do you want to keep our mics on sort of quietly and we can talk over it? Or what are you saying?
You're talking to me?
I'm just saying in general, guys.
No, I'm
what
just going to cut you guys off.
You're just going to turn us off?
Yeah, there's no
okay,
need
very
for
much.
Anyway,
Denise. This is the best of Rapid Fire.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. We are making the transition to Sports Radio 1290 on the AM dial here in Winnipeg.
Rapid Fire. 17 to 18-year-old boys.
Rapid Fire. The Grugs are always going to outpace the testing.
Raise your hand here if you've mocked a player while at a hockey game.
I'm here to party.
This muffin I'm eating is not that good.
Get rid of it.
Next question.
Way to go, Rick.
Lucky for the Canucks, Rippon's not any good. Kessel's not of captain material.
They probably should have tased him.
I googled my own birthday.
Anyways.
Sean Cronin.
Dollar bills, y'all.
They know Chara.
Wangsta.
You want to win now.
And I had him in Columbus.
Is Jeff Finger real?
She said she's bisexual.
It's absurd.
I'll be living at home till I'm 34, definitely.
Does that concern you?
I hate dry muffins.
You ready for Rapid Fire?
Rapid Fire.
So, Richie, is this getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here.
Briz Gallop? That's why they're on the waiver wire.
Good question, Drew.
He's a great skater.
Beth Pierogi.
We are family.
Hugh Jessamyn, a.k.a. Huge Specimen.
Fair enough.
Drafting is an inexact science.
You know how much I love Jay Pandolfo.
100%.
Shane Doan,
Fabian Brenstrom, Andre Markov.
Colligan in the Ustream chat room.
He's attractive.
I agree with that.
What?
Paul Kariya.
Turn the sticks over and have people play with ringette sticks.
Dion Phaneuf.
Worst captain ever.
One last one is a Palomino.
Rapid fire.
Headshots.
I love that.
Rapid fire. Kari Taco.
Fill those roles.
John Madden.
A three-time cup winner.
The team you have on the ice, to me, isn't a playoff team.
Ilya Kovalchuk.
Can he prove to be a possible top six forward?
He's going to be a gem.
Doug Waite.
It's been a tough go for him.
I'm going to channel Kreskin right now.
Phoenix Coyotes
mystery buyer is probably something made up.
It's just a red herring to distract everybody.
Rapid fire.
As he gets his prostate exam a different way.
Are you serious? That's awesome.
PK Subban.
Puck skills aren't tremendous. A very valuable commodity.
You won't even believe it.
Hamstring?
First hole in one ever.
When I turn on the highlights and I see the rookie highlights of the Anaheim Calgary game, I want to puke.
He's still a good leader.
Beast of a power forward.
Yeah. Kelly Kissio. I'm a proud subscriber to the NHL Center Ice Package. Thank you, Dad.
Rapid fire.
Drew's had a tough shot.
Yodelay-hoo. Yodelay-hoo.
True. Can you never do that on the show again?
I should really stop doing peyote before the show starts.
Corey Schneider, heck of a hockey player.
Portage and Podine. Lady Gaga can show up in my locker room any day of the week.
We're overrated. You have to score to win these days.
Huge specimen.
Huge specimen.
Who wants Cabernet?
Light Toronto on fire.
What are you, on Facebook?
Why are you doing that?
Anyway.
Harry Miller and Randy Gillen.
Mumford and Sons.
Jody Shelley.
Dad, welcome to the program.
Basically, when they say edgier, that probably means female host.
Rapid fire.
Is this career threatening at this point?
Go suck a lollipop.
Terrible idea.
Dude, yeah. We're not playing outdoor hockey here in northern Manitoba. Yeah.
Rapid fire.
It's believed that later on in the season, Phoenix Coyotes tickets are going to be available in the show and save book.
Rapid fire.
This is a joke.
Rapid fire.
Ezra Ginsberg may have more Facebook friends than the Phoenix Coyotes have fans of their games.
Rapid fire.
You can write all the stories you want, but you can't give the Leafs more talent.
I don't want to see highlights from the blue and white game.
Jay Rosehill fighting Mike Commissaire. Come on, get that off my TV.
Sickening.
Zenon Konopka.
Let me finish the question, please.
Whatever happened to popcorn and a beer?
What, you want me to rap?
Timo Solani.
Thought you were hip to the scene.
I want some dab.
This, I like.
Adam Oates.
I love his mustache.
It's a box pool.
Pretty talented goaltender in Andre Pavlich.
John Carlson from the Capitals. He just looks like a stud.
Drew, I'm with you.
Bobby Ryan.
Who wants a lot of money?
It's about money.
Zach Parise.
Daniel Sedin.
I agree with Ellie Kate.
The fact of the matter is,
Drew, I'm with you.
Everybody hates the Leafs.
This is a terrible question, first of all.
Let me finish the question, please.
Richie, tell us about your book again.
I was looking forward to that all day.
You need to keep it going?
It's something unpredictable. In the end, that's right.
Okay,
I had the time of your life.
I can hear myself. All right. You had to throw in Time of Your Life. I'm pretty sure we had everything in there. I was on, Denise was on, we had Allie Kay reference, Colgan in the chat room.
Sean Podine.
That was Doug McLean referencing the Blues. We had our contest winner. Mumford and Sons. You want me to ref? I don't know.
That was the best of the Illegal Curve radio show there in a nutshell. In case you missed any of the last 21 months of the show, that's pretty much 21 months boiled down to 4 minutes worth of a compilation. Of course, you can catch any of our previous episodes on the IllegalCurve.com website. All the archives are up there. So, you know, whatever. In case you want to go back and see how we sounded in March of 2009, you can check it out there on the Illegal Curve website. Let's go to the actual rapid fire for this week.
We still have a segment
here. We still have a rapid fire segment here for
Denise,
this week.
Denise, if you play the entire version of Good Riddance by Green Day, I actually will cry.
No.
If you play the entire thing, I'll cry.
I was trying to think of a song to play that sad.
I mean, that song
gets
me every
time.
It's
got to be Good Riddance. It's the only compilation song. I think it's the official worldwide compilation song.
I got another one. I Will Remember You by Sarah McLachlan.
Very risky retirement of you.
Such a moving piece of music.
If you want to, can you roll it in the background as we go through rapid fire? I'm sure that won't get the least bit annoying.
Which one?
All of them. Both of them. Both of them.
Okay. Jump between one. Jump back and forth there. Go from one to the other.
There could be one more song you can think of.
Okay, well, we'll start with rapid fire while you get that.
Denise,
up.
If there's vitamin C in the show log, I'd...
Oh, graduation.
Like the graduation song?
Graduation song.
That actually
nice.
Would be pretty good, too.
What about the Saved by the Bell graduation song?
I don't remember that one.
Like only yesterday we started.
Richie, who did you fancy more, Lisa Turtle or Kelly Kapowski?
I was a Kelly guy, man.
Kelly.
Yeah. Kelly. There was no Lisa Turtle. Unless you were Screech, that was it.
I like Lisa Turtle. She always had nice clothes and everything.
Well, I was looking at Jesse Spano.
She was really cute.
All right.
Jesse Spano, yes.
Let's go to the five Burrows.
Showgirls.
Yes, exactly. Showgirls. Yeah. Canucks forward Alex Burrows has been activated off of the long-term injury reserve after having off-season shoulder surgery. When healthy, what does he bring to the Canucks lineup?
He's a good rat. I mean, he's that's what he is. He's a fast skater. He's got pretty good hands for his role. He adds a speed element. He bickers with the other team. He gets them angry. He gets under their skin. Play a physical game. Plays on the edge. A really, really good, really, really good player. Probably not a top line winger, but playing with Sedins, they can hide him there, obviously, and he can make him look good. But
it's amazing. We've actually got the graduation song.
He's good. He's going to be a good addition to that team, and it's more offense for a team that's already loaded up front.
Ezzy, you have any comments about Alex Burrows?
It was nice to see him back. I mean, it was his first game last night, and I don't think he got on the scoreboard, but he was there. He was crashing the net, so I mean, he brings offense and defense. He's a versatile player, and I mean, he brings a lot to that team. Rafi Torres got a hat trick last night, the Torres trick, Alexander Burrows, those guys, Malhotra, those guys bring the grit and that you need in the playoffs. When I think Burrows, I think of that's the type of guy that's going to be very valuable in the playoffs for that team.
I agree.
Because, I mean, the Sedins are not
physical. He wasn't good in the playoffs last year, so he had to be good this year.
Yeah.
After missing 9 games with a concussion, Jason Pominville returned to the Sabres lineup tonight. He has sustained the concussion after being hit from behind by Blackhawks defenseman Nicklas Chalmerson. Chalmerson served only a 2-game suspension. Is this situation a perfect example of why the length of a player's suspension should be determined by the severity of the injury suffered?
Generally, Drew, again, I've talked to you about this before, you can hold the guy out and keep him out longer than the guy who got injured, and it's still be slow because of the quality of the players. But I understand what you're saying. Basically, what we need is more harsh penalties. You can't have the whole stay out as long as the injured player is injured, because you could hold a player out who's not very good. A Crosby makes a hit, a guy who's held out for 5 games because they don't want to see Crosby play in the league. So you can't do that, but you certainly can increase the penalties, especially for concussion hits, especially for hits to the blindside hits to the head. So, yes, I understand the point, and I would agree with it.
I don't think this is a good example of why a player should be suspended for the length of the injured player's... I don't even know what I'm saying right now, but this isn't a good example of changing the suspension rule, because if a player misses... I think a better example would be a player who misses a full season, really. But I don't see that happening in professional sports. I think it's way too difficult to really
make a direct correlation between an injury and a player and how long that player is out for? Is it just is it asking too much?
But Drew, for instance, let's say that a player gets knocked out by a hit from behind, okay, and he's out for 3 months.
He's amazing.
Maybe he had another injury from the previous year. So how do you?
I hear exactly.
I mean,
what you're
I just don't see that ever happening.
Yeah, you can't treat an injury in a vacuum. Is really what it boils down to. The Anaheim Ducks announced that defenseman Cam Fowler will not be sent back to his junior team. While he is off to a good start in his NHL career, do you fear that he may pick up some bad traits by playing a full year for a defensively weak Anaheim Ducks team?
No, Drew. I think he'll get an opportunity to play and learn the ropes of defense, and it's a growing year for that team, basically. And He'll learn to tough it out. He'll learn his role in fairly big minutes, and they can rush his development if he's as talented as he appears to be. It's a position for him that probably is going to accelerate his development.
I want to know what Cam Fowler and Scott Niedermeyer are watching together on TiVo, because it was announced by, I think, Darren Dreger that Cam Fowler's living with Scott Niedermeyer. So I find that more interesting.
I didn't know that.
But, the Ducks are a little bit thin on defense compared to previous years, but I don't think he's necessarily going to pick up bad traits and it's going to affect his development. Because he's 18 years old. This is the highest level of hockey he's ever going to play. And I think it's good that they've decided to stick with him, because it looks like he's got a lot of potential.
Absolutely.
Penguin star, we spoke about this a bit earlier, but I'll get a little bit more in depth in it. Penguin starting goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury is off to a terrible start. 1 win, 5 losses, goals against average of 3.35, and an .863 save percentage. The man who is ostensibly his backup, Brent Johnson, is 5-0-1 with a 1.16 goals against average and a .960 save percentage. If you are Penguins head coach Dan Bylsma, how do you balance this tricky situation, especially with a goalie like Marc-Andre Fleury, who is known to be quite sensitive?
It's a good question, Drew, because now with the Staal injury, you're not as good as you were going to be before, and maybe you could play Fleury through the streak. Now the question is, do you have to play Brent Johnson, have Fleury play himself out of the streak, you know, by practicing on his game? I actually would err towards the former. I would say you play Fleury through the streak, your team's good enough, you're going to get Staal back in mid-December, and the truth is, right now you're already seeing it. Johnson led him 2 goals in the first period tonight. Johnson's going to come back to earth. So I would bet that the play from Johnson and Fleury from today's date, Fleury will have better numbers regardless of the games played. So I would just ride the Fleury train out, let him find his game back, and then if you give up a few points here now, you'll be able to get him back later when you get Jordan Staal back, and then when you add a winger or two at the deadline.
I think that the way it's going so far is probably also, it's probably the smart decision. After tonight's game, though, I wouldn't hesitate to start Fleury a little bit more if I was Bylsma, because Marc-Andre Fleury has had poor starts in his career before. I mean, he didn't come into the league with a bang. He didn't exactly come in like Steve Mason did. So I think it would be nice to start Fleury a little bit more, because I think these losses that have piled up are not necessarily the result of his play specifically. He's got a new defense in front of him.
Also true. Good point, Ezzy.
Why not?
Play a lot of hockey, too.
University of Denver forward Jesse Martin suffered a serious neck injury after being hit by University of North Dakota forward Brad Malone. The force of the hit knocked Martin unconscious, fractured 3 of his C2 vertebrae, and he remains hospitalized in Minneapolis. While fears he would be permanently paralyzed have subsided, it was a frightening experience for all. While it was a hit to the head, Martin was skating through the neutral zone with the puck with his head down. Pretend you are Brad Malone. Will this incident change the way you play hockey in the future and perhaps affect your usefulness on the ice?
Richie, I'll jump in here really quickly and then I'll let you get your take. I haven't seen this hit, but I've heard a lot about it because a lot of people are tweeting this, so it's tough for me to make a comment. But, I'll definitely say this much. When I see these incidents in hockey, it makes me, just, especially me and Rich are coaching this year, and it makes me think a little bit more about how I would tell kids to approach, skating with the puck through the neutral zone. But, Rich, I'll let you talk about it because you've actually seen the hit.
Yeah,
so.
It was a tough hit, guys. It was in the own zone. I think curling back in his own zone was the situation. I don't think Malone intended to hurt him. It was a big hit. For the most part, college isn't that, American college isn't that physical of a game. There's a lot of clutching and grabbing, actually, more than you'd think. This is one of those tough things both ways. I think what Ezzy says is right, though. It does change a bit in terms of, he might... It has to change his game a bit. I don't think it's possible for it to not change the game, especially considering you're a college guy. Malone's drafted by the Avs, but there's a very good possibility both these guys don't make the NHL now. And I mean, you're talking about your life moving forward. So yeah, I would say that there is an effect.
Columbus Blue Jackets forward Derek Brassard ran into a heap of trouble after an interview with Montreal radio station CKAC. He was asked about the Blue Jackets' attendance issues and the ownership's commitment to hockey in Columbus. Brassard said that he answered that he doesn't know if his owner knows hockey. CKAC reported that he said he doesn't know if his owner likes hockey. Two very different answers. Do you think Brassard spoke poorly about the future of the Blue Jackets in Columbus, or was he done in by the notorious Montreal media?
Yeah, done by the media. Drew, you have to remember, I think Broussard's from Quebec, so his
yes,
English
definitely
is
francophone.
Isn't great.
No, it's not perfect.
They took this and they ran with it, and it could have been a quote. People read him passing. You're not sure if he really knows hockey, which he doesn't. I'm sure John McConnell or his son, I don't think he does know hockey. Maybe he does. But and then you say he doesn't like hockey. Yeah, you know, let's relax on doesn't like hockey. Who really cares? But, yeah, Montreal media trying to blow it out of proportion and you know, another case of that, isn't it, Drew?
Yeah, it really is. You know, the sort of the overarching topic of the conversation was potential teams to move to Quebec City, and it looks like they caught a young guy who doesn't speak English as his first language.
They trapped him.
They trapped him, and it's really shameful. You know, it really is shameful. It bugs me. I think it's slimy. But anyways, Ezzy.
Well, Drew, once again, I'd like to listen to this interview. It was in English.
It was not. It was in French.
It was a French language station. I mean,
and
you do speak
French, though.
Yeah, I can understand. I can understand French, and I mean, I'd like to listen to it before I say, you know, whether or not he spoke poorly about the, you know, the future of the Blue Jackets. But it seems like, first off, when you ask players these types of questions, they hate answering.
They hate it.
It doesn't matter who you are. I mean, Phoenix would be a great example. Whenever these guys are asked questions about the future of the team, they basically say the same thing.
Well,
we hope that everything works out and the team stays
in
Phoenix.
And in this case, he's really damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, because he's a Quebecois.
Right.
If he says, no, I think the team should stay in Columbus. I love him in Columbus. He's a public enemy number one of Quebec. But, of course, if he says anything, you know, pro-Quebec, then he's in trouble with the organization.
Remus
it's just slimy.
Remus can check this, but I believe he is in... And, Drew, you were obviously here multiple times because it's the sister city in Quebec. I believe Broussard's from Hull.
That could be. I'm not sure.
And that is a very bilingual.
Well, Hull is the sister city to Ottawa. They're right across the water from each other.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
Don't ask me how I know that, where he's from exactly, but maybe it's because I partied in Hull. But.
Confirmed he is from Hull.
He is from Hull.
Wow.
Great town.
You know, I'm gonna
what's the bar? Seven, what's that? Seven. What's the popular bar in Hull? Because when I was last in Ottawa, I went to
Drew. You should know
that bar in Hull, Quebec.
Drew's got a smirk on
his face. you drive over the bridge and you go to Hull, Quebec, and there's that bar, and it's a great college town.
Yeah, there's a lot of bars there. I'm not sure which one specifically you're
talking
about.
We should go there. We never partied in Ottawa or Hull or.
Speak for yourself. I partied in Ottawa.
No, together though. I mean,
you
get into some trouble, Drew.
Drew and I partied in Ottawa, but his shirt kept sweating through his shirt.
That's really uncalled for. We can talk about our parties in Montreal. Should we bring that up on air, or are we going to leave that for a while?
We'll leave that for
the behind-the-scenes episode of the Illegal Curve Radio
Show. Apparently we've been doing all night today.
Exactly. Exactly.
Good thing for that edit
button. For the people on Ustream have really been enjoying this. Final rapid-fire question. Given that this is our final show here on Kick FM, it's only fitting we finish with a retrospective-related question. What is your favorite moment in this show's 20-plus month history?
It's a great question. I was thinking about it today when you sent this out. I might have to go all the way back to that Stan Fischler episode show when we had him on, and he was just going Stan Fischler off, and you and him had a dialogue about a corned beef sandwich. That probably was my highlight. There was so many. I mean, favorite moment. There's a lot of favorite moments, but
Wait, do you have note cards?
Well, that might be. That
do
might
you have
be
notes prepared.
That might be the one that gets out. Obviously, having all some of those amazing guests and some of those repeat guests who give us all their time. I mean. There's a number of them, but that one stood out. That one, we were just, after we got up here, we were, you know, laughing. We had just kind of started out.
That's the March 11th, 2009 episodes. The guests were Stan Fischler and Mark Seidel. So you can check that out in the archives. The interview with Stan
interview.
Fischler
was hilarious. Terrific. Yeah.
Ezzy, I'm going to flip over to you.
Well, I mean, it's a good question, very difficult to answer because, you know, 20 months, you know, that's such a long time, 21 months or whatever. But, you know, boys, we've had some really, you know, good times here, and we've had the luxury. We're lucky that we've been able to interview so many good guys. I mean, something that stands out in my mind. I'm not saying. I mean, personally, to pick the best interview of all time, I think, Theron Fleury was amazing. I think of the Patrick Sharp interview right in the beginning. Sean Podine was incredible.
That was a great one.
I'll always remember this, and I've told people this a lot when we've talked to meeting people, in the media and stuff. But, you know, earlier this year, Kelly Rudy came on the show on his birthday.
Yes.
And, I mean, it not only was a good interview, but just the fact that, I mean, we're a small radio station. you know, hockey show on you know, college radio. And Kelly Rudy, we didn't know, I didn't know that at least. I think Drew might have known that, but and Richie found out before we went on air.
Kelly's been on a couple times, so it was either the June 10th, 2009 show.
No, it was earlier this year.
June 10th was when he did the, that was game six of the Penguin series, and he was right for dinner.
That was the January 13th, 2010 show when Kelly Rudy came on his birthday.
And that was his birthday, and as I mentioned before, I think Drew knew and Richard didn't know, and he mentioned to us, and I just thought that was incredible. Kelly Rudy is one of the biggest names, Kelly Rudy on CBC is, in my mind, always entertaining and very informative. He loves to talk about goalies, but we had a really, really good chat with him. But that is one of the greatest moments. And, you know, having Stan Fischler on, you know, kibitzing with Stan Fischler was incredible.
Quite a sandwich.
But, you know, I mean, I also, you know, before Remus came on,
are you talking about every show?
Before Remus came onto the radio show, at least not the website, but the radio show, and he used to call in, and our friends that have called in.
It's been
a lot of fun. I mean, you know Drew's grandfather called in.
I
called in twice. I disguised my voice a little.
Nice.
And I acted a little out of control.
You were ranting and raving.
Do you have
like
a favorite moment, Remus?
I'd say all in all, the show and where we are today from, I was there at the beginning.
You certainly were.
3 years ago.
With
the website. It's really hard to believe how far we come. Favorite moments, interview with Sean Poudin. We remember laughing pretty hard about the pal.
Yeah.
And even, for me, I guess the favorite moment was being able to do the rapid fire every week and then see you guys, laugh after. Yeah. And we always... I was catching the funny things that you guys said, and
you were able to pull them out pretty well. The Sean Poudin interview that we're talking about was from June 23rd of this year.
Well, Remus did a great job of putting those together.
Kyle Kozier, who's been on the show before and very instrumental on the website, but I believe Kyle knew Sean, and then he got that interview for us through Richie. And it was incredible because Kyle not in the studio for that interview?
He was.
Kyle was here.
That's what
I thought. And
that's
I mean,
that was the.
Was that interview in March or April?
No, which one? The Sean Poudin interview?
April or May? It was pretty recently.
No,
April
it was
or May?
June. June 23rd, 2010.
Okay, well, it was close. 2 months.
It was
give or take 2 months.
That's what it was. You were out of town.
Was I out of town?
You
or
were
was
out
I
of town.
I think he was at the dinner.
I think I was at the sports dinner. Yeah,
okay. And I remember Kyle. I mean, before we went on the show, Kyle was telling us about how nice of a guy Sean Poudin was, and it literally felt like Sean Poudin was in the room, and then after the show, he was going to, drive us to the Palomino Club for some beers. But, that was an amazing interview, definitely.
Before we go to break, it's really just pouring salt in the wounds now. Martin Brodeur has left the game.
The New Jersey game
against Chicago at 5:48 of the second period.
Don't tell me Jeff Frazee's about to be called up from Albany.
Johan Hedberg's in. Brodeur is leaving with a hand or wrist injury. That's just being reported on Twitter.
Thanks for reading that.
That's not good news.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, that is just so anticlimactic.
At the end of the day, we're still a hockey show. You got to inform the people when there's information to be informed. Let's take our final commercial break, and when we come back, some thank yous, some cheers to everybody. We'll end it with a bang. You're listening.
We're going
to
do it up.
One final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. Wow, I'm tearing up. Well, let it play as we keep talking here. It's okay. Anybody else getting emotional here? Anybody want? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show, the final segment here on 92.9
KICK FM. Sarah McLachlan is such a national treasure. She really is.
That makes me think of the Gretzky retirement.
Michael, the Lilith Fair Festival.
Okay.
We should have a two-hour retrospective on Sarah McLachlan's career. She is a huge hockey fan, too.
I'm going to let you do that on your own.
Do you have her on MySpace?
Yeah.
Final segment here on KICK FM. It's only fitting that we end by saying we have some heartfelt thank yous to say to a lot of different people who've helped with the show over the years. First of all, let's start with the various guests we've had on the show.
It's funny, aren't you thinking, Richie and Remus, right now that Drew's gonna pull out like one of those like rolled pieces of paper and he rolls it out and it goes all the way out the studio? Anyways, that's what I thought of.
Does anybody know what he's talking about?
Yeah, the thank yous of the Oscars. Drew, don't forget Laura because she'll be happy.
Yeah,
I don't forget Laura.
Opie.
I wouldn't forget Laura.
Well, you know, like, you know what happened with somebody who forgot their who was the star in Hollywood?
Oh, that's right. It was somebody who forgot their husband, right?
Later.
I think Hillary Swank.
Yeah, yeah, Hillary right. Swank forgot her husband.
Doesn't she work at the keg downtown?
She served us last week at the keg.
Yes, she actually served us at the keg. Ezzy, that was the creepiest pickup line in the history of the world.
Okay, focus. Focus here.
No, no, I got to tell this story. Ezzy dropping this on the waitress last week at the keg. She's coming over to take her drink order. Ezzy looks over at her and says, "Has anybody ever told you you look like Hillary Swank?" And
just so the audience knows, she said no, but she thanked me for the compliment. You guys have to back me up here. She did thank me.
She
for
was
the
happy about it.
She did thank me for the compliment. She added me on Facebook and MySpace, and she also said that she kind of does think she does look like Hillary Swank.
I wasn't sure it was a compliment.
Yeah,
Hillary she actually ran away and cried and never came back.
Hillary
but no big deal.
Fine actress.
I think she just wanted.
What's wrong with Hillary Swank?
Yeah, she. You know they work on tips, Ezzy. So when they, you know, anyways. I'll start by saying, of course, thank you to my girlfriend. She's referred to on the show as the Kentucky Princess on more than one occasion, so I'll start by thanking her for being so accommodating as we run away and leave every Wednesday night. Of course, how are we going to fill our Wednesday nights from now on?
Yeah, there's a thought to maybe continuing to go out Wednesday nights, even though there is no show. We could actually just come into a place, sit around a table, and just talk at it for other radio. People disturb us and get really mad at them, tell them we're not on break yet.
Schizophrenic people do it all the time.
Wow. Anyways, let's
start. I can say that because I'm part schizo. So
enough. There's been so many guests here on this show over the past 21 months.
Absolutely.
I think we're happy to report that we've had a beat writer from every single NHL team that's been on this air, mm-hmm. that's been on with us.
Yep.
Really, if we wanted to name them all, it would take us hours on end. But there's a certain few we have to single out.
Mm-hmm.
I think from the Winnipeg Free Press, Tim Campbell and Randy Turner. We talked about them earlier, but a big thank you to Tim and Randy.
Absolutely.
They've both been on multiple times, and we appreciate their insights and giving of their time every time they're on with us. From the Globe and Mail, we've had numerous writers from the Globe and Mail on. Eric DeHatchick, of course, who's one of our favorites. James Myrtle.
Sure.
Matthew Sekeresh.
Yep. Sean Gordon.
James Gordon.
James Gordon, absolutely, from the Ottawa Citizen,
From the Ottawa Citizen.
Jason Botchford.
Jason Botchford from the Vancouver province has been on four times, I believe.
No, I think more than that, Drew.
No, I think it was four. I counted earlier. Yeah.
And Anthony Sanfilippo.
Sanfilippo holds the record.
Six times.
No, I think it was seven.
It's possible I made a mistake.
Scott Morrison
has
been on three or four times.
Scott Morrison.
I did an interview with us before we were on the radio.
Yeah. Jeff Merrick from Hockey Night in Canada. Kelly Rudy we mentioned before.
Ron McLean.
Ron McLean.
Yep.
Shelley Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
A number of times,
she's been on a number of times.
Dan
Wood, of course, one of our favorites from Anaheim.
Jim Fox.
Jim Fox from L.A., absolutely. Another one of our favorites. As you can see, the list is lined. Aaron Port's line.
Aaron Port's been great.
And today's guest, Craig Custance.
Yeah, Craig Custance. This is his fourth time, I think, on the air.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Staples. We've had a lot, guys, that we've been fortunate with the responses. And we inquire for guests, and most people are tremendously polite, more than willing to come on the show and help us out. And if it's not one time, they're willing to come on another time. The one thing about the hockey industry, as opposed to the baseball, football, and basketball, there aren't many divas. Most people are out there to help you. Most people are very friendly. Yeah. And so it's awfully... they make it awfully easy on us.
Yeah.
To do these things.
It's amazing the amount of times, any of us will email a guest, with a request to come on the air, and the answer comes back 5 minutes later, and it's immediate, and it's sure... And it's here's my cell phone number, and it's done in a second. It's really,
absolutely.
These guys don't, they don't need to. But they do it, and we appreciate it very much.
Drew, are we going to each get a chance here to make some thank yous?
Absolutely.
I have some special thank
yous.
If you had more thank yous,
Start with Ezzy,
and then I'll wrap it up. And once again, we'll go to Richie, we'll go to Remus, and then we're going to wrap it up with our cheers and jeers, a special final Kick FM cheers and jeers. But there's a lot of people, that we have to thank. And we'll start off with Red River College. Rick Baverstock is the station manager of Kick FM. He gave us the start while I was in school here in the creative communications program at Red River College. He's been very good to us. He gave us 2 hours. He's pumped our show on the website. He got us on the radio station in Brandon. So
yes.
Rick, the boss, a very special thank you to him.
Amen.
Another thank you to John Pira, who is the technical guru wizard. And everyone in the creative communications program knows John Pira. He's helped us out from the beginning up until now. And our friend Dave Shore, who I went to creative communications with and is a friend of mine and friend of all of ours, he helped us out in getting the show off the bat, and he's called in many times to the show, and he's a big fan of the show. I also want to thank you know, all of the people that have opted for our show, all the people that have helped us out. You know, Denise, you're going to get the biggest thank you. But when we started off, Adam Toy, who's now on Curve,
yes.
helped us out. David Turnbull, who works for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers now, helped us out. Heather McGowan, who is also someone who I know from the Creative Communications Program. She's worked in radio at Power 97. She helped us out a lot. Kirsten May,
yes,
who's the voice, you know,
voice
now works at CJOB. And McKim Kringen George.
That's right.
She helped us out a lot with, you know, putting together, you know, sound bites and commercials. And she opted our show a bunch of times. Thank her. And, you know, you know, aside from thanking you guys, of course, who, you know, I just want to thank everybody for listening. All the fans, the support in Winnipeg has been incredible. You know, we went on the free press show earlier, and they put when we had the website going, it's still there, obviously, but when we were, you know, posting daily on the website, the Winnipeg Free Press really helped us out. But it's, you know, just the fans, the support in Winnipeg has been incredible. You know, we go out a lot and we talk to people in the media, you know, whether it's, you know, Scott Brown, you know, of the Manitoba Moose, or Ace Burpee, or, you know, we had Cosmo on last year. Just the support, everyone in there, you know, whether it's television, radio, or within sports organizations, everyone's just been really supportive of our show, and we really appreciate that. You know, and obviously, I'd also like to thank my dad, who's a big supporter of the show. And, you know, my family and friends, everyone out there, we can't list all of our friends, but, you know, everyone, Hart, Sammy, everyone who comes out with us. And, you know, obviously Denise has been our producer for well over a year, and, you know, she's not getting paid to do this.
No.
She's doing this because she, for some reason, likes us. But, you know, she's opted so many times.
So many.
And, you know, I think the winter days when you came in, when it was, you know, -30 below, and you came in and done a wicked job for us. So, you know, hats off to you.
Amen. I agree with every one of those. I'm not going to go over everybody he just said because he almost covered it all. You know what, guys? As he said it, I'm going to say quickly, thanks to the guests that have been on the show, people who continually listen to the show, and the fans, people in the Ustream, like, you know, Mike Colgan, I was on his radio show this week, Ali Kay. There's so many of the names, and you know more of the names than I do, Drew, but they're there every week. They want to chat. They send questions. It's people who go back to the website and they send us kind words about the website. And just the readers from the website, everything that came to this point, people who download the show, people who listen to the show at work, and people who give me comments about the show and questions about the show. And again, we're not here. All those opportunities were provided for us, but we're not here unless there's fans listening to us. Because if there's nobody listening to us, nobody wants to put us on, and nobody wants to continue to, you know, give us opportunities. And we're very thankful for the opportunities. We're thankful to Chris Brook at 1290 for, you know, finding us and giving us a shot, and thanks to Marty Gold and everybody here who's given us that platform, because the platform's not here.
Yeah, Marty, I forgot to mention Marty, too. Marty, obviously, I knew that I was kind of leaving that for Drew to finish off.
Sure.
Marty's been very supportive of these four Jewish boys, and
right.
And, you know, he's had Drew and you and yourself, Richie, on the show.
Sure,
I think I was on there once, but he's been very supportive, and, you know, congratulations to Marty for all the success he's getting on his show, and we're obviously going to miss that aspect of being on Kick.
Before I throw it to Remus here, I'll give his thank yous. I thank, obviously, to my parents, to my dad, wouldn't be here without him, and to my mom, who's our biggest fan. I better give her credit now, because if I didn't give her credit,
you'd
and she is our biggest fan.
Yeah.
I would hear about it, but in all honesty, she's our biggest fan. She's, I think, listened to every single show we've had and has...
And calls you after every show,
yes,
too.
Absolutely. So that is... there goes my number one thank you. Michael?
First off, I'm going to thank you guys for having me here. This is
I thought
awesome.
You were going to thank God right off the bat.
No. Sure, I'll thank the man upstairs also. But thank you guys for, you know, having me on. It's been a blast coming on in every week. Really enjoyable. I don't want to thank my dad and my family and friends. You guys pretty much, you know, said everything. And I guess thank the fans and thank everyone who, you know, visits the website and downloads it on iTunes. You know, check legalcurve.com and click on the iTunes link for sure. That's all I got.
That's very well done. You know, I don't have much else I can add. You guys have thanked many of the same people. You know, I'll thank, of course, my family, my friends, my lovely girlfriend, the love of my life, Laura Piles. So, who's, you know, might be listening, so that would be good.
Better thank your grandfather.
I'm going to thank my
don't
grandfather.
Zadie.
I'm going to thank my Zeta, of course, who listens in every single week, and he calls in and with his suggestions and is you know, pointed but right, is spot on usually criticism. So, you know, thank him for listening each and every week. You know, thank the people out there. You said it, Richard, but I mean, if it wasn't for the fans and the people that we, you know, that listen to us on a weekly basis and join us in the chat rooms on a weekly basis and send us tweets on a weekly basis, we wouldn't be here. And I mean, without them, without them, we're four guys sitting around a table,
sure,
talking hockey.
Right.
So it's, you know, which would be fun on its own. But really, it is them that we do our a big thanks to. Again, I spoke about it with Marty Gold early today on the Great Canadian Talk Show. You know, big thank you to Marty, of course, to Rick, really everybody who took a chance on us.
That's right.
They didn't need to. We came to them. We had a small sort of sample size, and they took a chance. And this is where we're at today. After that, taking that chance and working with us, and you know, there's a few hiccups notwithstanding, but. You know, we really owe gratitude to everyone here at Kick FM, and you know, really is a good example of what can be done on the quote unquote training radio station. There's some great content and a lot of great shows and some great quality programming on this station. That we're still going to remain big fans of Kick FM even after we make our move to Sports Radio 1290. So I mean, we do owe a debt of gratitude to everybody here at Kick FM that they'll all eternally be thankful for them. You know, let's go to Cheers and Jeers.
Yep.
And then we'll finish up for the final time here on 92.9 Kick FM. It's time for Cheers and Jeers. Cheers and Jeers. Cheers and Jeers.
I'll give Adam Burish, props for taking that tongue-in-cheek and not taking it too seriously that, he's not good in NHL 11.
Okay, I'm going to jeer power rankings. I think it's completely pointless to rank NHL teams week by week. You're going to look back at those rankings in 3 weeks and be like, this means nothing.
Cheering that documentary Oil Change. They put out a good product. TSN's broadcasting it. I've really enjoyed it.
Cheering the Edmonton Oilers. They've announced that they're going to become the first Canadian team to have a cheerleader in the NHL.
Cheers and jeers.
Cheer or jeer?
Richard.
Well, cheer or jeer, there's only really one cheer tonight, and that's the cheer Denise, because she comes here every single week. Finding a board op producer beforehand was a difficult task, and Denise offered up her services once and did a terrific job and was kind enough to come back every single week. Bad weather, good weather, it could be a beautiful night in the summer, it could be a freezing night in the middle of December, always here. We did shows on holidays, we did shows this, and continually here, and obviously without her, this show could not have been close to as good as we feel it has been, and so cheer to Denise.
Michael Remus, cheer or jeer?
There's only one cheer that I can do right now, and I'm going to cheer Denise. Thank you so much for coming out every week. I came in the middle, and it was great to meet you. So family, we had some good talks about True Blood in the back. So thanks a lot for recording the shows on CD and, making our show good and playing all, the rapid fires and all that jazz. So thanks a lot, Denise.
Ezra Ginsberg, cheer, cheer.
Okay, and there's still a debate, about whether or not, who brought Denise into the family.
Oh, that's a debate.
I still claim that I was the one that found Denise.
Utter nonsense. I was the one who emailed her.
I contacted Marty Gold. Marty Gold gave me Denise's number, and I placed the first call. You did the follow-up call. But anyways, my cheer, of course, tonight goes to Denise, who, it feels like we've only really had one op, but, basically came in about a year and 3 months ago or something like that. But, you've come to our show, and I know that you're not the biggest hockey fan, but, you're a really lovely person. You're friendly. You're funny. You're always smiling. And you're rarely in a bad mood, and you've cheered me up before, and you've cheered other people up. But most importantly, you've basically been the op for the show for the majority of the time that we've been on Kick, and we really appreciate it. And we're pumped up to go to Sports Radio 1290, but it's kind of sad, that you're not coming with us. I tried to get you in, but I couldn't. But yeah, my cheer obviously goes to
Are you serious? You're funny.
I'm going to jeer tonight. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to cheer Denise as well. It's hard going last because you guys have pretty much said everything I wanted to say already. But, a few times over the past, however many months, I've had to go on the other side of the glass because Denise does have things that come up in her life, believe it or not. And it is not an easy job that she's been doing for us for these past number of months. You're multitasking. You're thinking on your feet. You're moving left, right, and center. And Much like Richard said, and much like Remus said, and much like Ezra said, this show would not be nearly as smooth and would not sound nearly as good as it does without you behind the glass, keeping us in line, keeping us tight to time and everything else. And we really do owe you a tremendous debt of gratitude that really our words cannot adequately express how much you have meant to the show and how much we appreciate the efforts you've put in for us here on Kick FM and, you know, for the past, you know, number of months. And truly, we'll always be grateful for the time you volunteered here on Kick.
Round of applause for Denise.
Woohoo! All embarrassed and blushing.
It was actually our goal to get you crying, but
no, I don't cry.
So Denise, are you gonna cheer? Are you gonna cheer yourself now?
No, actually, that's funny. No, I've actually worked in a commercial station, so I've been paid to opt too. But this has been the best experience I've had so far, and I'm gonna miss you guys so much. So. Right.
Well, I can finish off by saying that anybody that's listening to this that may be in the radio business in at the least bit, you can't do better than phoning up Denise, getting a hold. You can get a hold of us. We'll get you in touch with Denise. You know, send us an email, drew@illegalcurve.com. Denise is a valuable person to have on your team, and professional and friendly and outgoing and everything you would want in a person on your team. And without her, we would not be nearly as good as we are today. And for her, for that, we owe her a debt of gratitude. That's it, guys. It's only 21 months. 21 months here on Kick FM. We've said our thank yous. We encourage all of our listeners to come join us on Saturday morning, starting this coming Saturday, November the 6th, 10 a.m. until 12 noon here on Sports Radio 1290 on the AM dial.
Hide your kids, hide your wife. Legal Curves moving to Sports Radio 1290.
I'm not sure about your kids or why you're hiding them, but that's a separate issue altogether. You can find the show online, of course, www.sportsradio1290.com. We are still going to be on iTunes, so you can subscribe to our iTunes feed. Just go to illegalcurve.com and click on the iTunes button. You'll find us there. Certainly follow us on Twitter @illegalcurve. You get all the latest updates on the show. And you can always send in your suggestions or your requests or your comments or whatever's on your mind in the hockey world there. You can also follow us on Facebook, illegalcurve.com on Facebook. That's where you can find us. And, of course, you can find Ezzy on Facebook. He needs a few more Facebook friends.
It's true.
He's only got about 8,000 or something. It has been a wild ride here on Kick FM for the last 21 months. And to think that it all started on Sunday mornings in the basement on doing podcasts that we may or may not each and every week known how to properly record them.
Yes.
We are thankful more than I can adequately express for those of you who've come along the ride with us for the last 20 months. And we hope you'll continue with us as this journey takes us over to 1290, Sports Radio 1290. For the final time here on 92.9 Kick FM, we wish you good night and good luck.
The Illegal Curve Radio Show has been presented by Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg. Tune in again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock for more of what you love.